Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. One of the things I've learned about radio is that I've gotten a real appreciation for what they call last minute. You don't really think about this when you're watching or listening. Oh yeah, this, you know, this just in, or breaking news, or any of the other many things that they say about it. I was literally talking to Catherine Arnett in Japan just recently. It's fascinating. I mean, literally just right before the show. So Catherine is the Marine. I'll let her tell her details. I'm not going to go into a whole lot about it, but it's quite fascinating what's happening with her. And she's the one that the Marines wanted to kick out in court martial because she refused the COVID jab, which is every American's right. Under federal law, you have no responsibility to take an experimental medicine. And so it's quite fascinating to see how this is all progressing. So we'll see what happens. And like, again, so hopefully she'll be able to call in or type in or do something like that on the Skype line. We'll get to more details as exactly what's happening. But it should be quite fascinating. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the Marines are going to do. I don't know what she's going to do. I don't know anything about it. But we're literally talking, you know, about 30 seconds before the show started. I'm like, okay, now what? What are we going to do? You know, so we shall see what happens. So she's going to try and call or type in on live chat, or we're not sure what's going to go, but that's how last minute this gets. And so again, I'm going to let her tell her story when she gets a chance to come on the show and tell it. And so this should be fascinating. But anyway, Catherine's a friend of the show, and we shall keep watch over her situation. The other stuff, the title of the show, this is kind of a gutsy show today. And, you know, conservatism / GOP are dead. Long live the new American Revolution. And the reason I put that in there, I found a fascinating article. And so if you go to the regular search engines, you get nothing. You get nothing but liberal crap. You know, you put in, you know, something or like, you know, why don't conservatives fight back, or why don't Republicans fight back? That's what I was looking at. And I said, okay, so now what? You know, and I get all this liberal stuff. The Republicans suck. The Republicans are Nazis. The Republicans are right wing. And it's like, that's not what I'm asking. I'm looking for insightful articles from Republicans as to why they don't fight back, why they don't do anything, why they're a bunch of geldings. I mean, there's a reason I call them the gelding old party. And if you don't, that's GOP. It comes with the GOP. It stands for Grand Old Party. But I call them the gelding old party because I wanted to have GOP. You know, I wanted to keep the acronym, but replace one of the words. And if you don't know what a gelding is, then look it up and you'll understand why, how I feel about the Republicans. I'm not much more in favor of conservatives. Oh, but Greg, let me channel Rush Limbaugh here. But Greg, this is a conservative talk show. No, it's not. No, this is a revolution. This is an activist, advocates, citizen legislation show. We are not journalists here. Not one of us is a journalist because we're not journaling. We're not describing what's happening. We're making things happen. That's the whole point. The biggest push right now is to get something on our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. So, all right. So Catherine's still, I tell you what, let me send a message. Try not to send messages during the show, but let's see what's going on. And don't mind me. I don't want to say something about what I'm saying here. On the air. This is what happens. People, they try and reach me right while I'm... yeah. And so it gets, all right. Sorry about that. So we're trying to work out some details to get Catherine on. All right. So let's get back to what's going on. The Republicans refuse to fight back. They're a bunch of geldings. The conservatives, I don't know. They're just not doing anything. And I couldn't figure out why, you know, because what we do here, you would think that if conservatives and even the patriots and the independents, and the Republicans especially, if they really wanted to fight back, they would embrace our citizen legislation and throw it in the face of all the Marxist Democrats. I mean, they'd be pounding our door down. Give us more legislation. What can we do to help? You know, how many, you know, what do we do? We'll send the bills to news media outlets and government. Okay. And they're not doing that. They're not fighting back. They're not sending our bills in. They're not even sharing our shows. You know, so we're subject to the oppressive Marxist deep state social media cabal, and they're not doing it. And so they're letting them win. And my question is, why are they letting them win? I know they're letting them win. Everybody knows they're letting them win. And unless this turns around, the country will be destroyed and turn into a Marxist dictatorship. It's pretty much on the way now. We are living through fascinating times. This is the second American Revolution. The only question is, will it get started? And that's my job and a lot of other folks' jobs, to get it started in a peaceful way, fighting with computers, doing things that can change the country. You know, I realized a long time ago when I started Action Radio back in 2014 that the only thing left was the laws. You know, you look at the politicians, they've all been bought. Later, I discovered that elections are all rigged. You know, it's all done by machines and computers and stealing and, you know, getting rid of the Republican observers and stuffing the ballots and running the same ballot through several times and doing mail-in stuff and not checking the signatures. And there's like hundreds of ways to cheat, but they're all cheating. And so the candidates are selected. And one of the biggest cheats of all is the fact that we have only two parties selecting the candidates for us. And they give us such a narrow pool of idiots to choose from. I don't want to choose from the idiots. I want to open it up to the entire country. So one of the best ways to do that is to more messages coming in. All right. Hang on. Let me play something for you guys. I'll be right back, guys. Sorry. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Yep, back live, just in the process of sending a message. Don't mind me. The things I try and do. Yeah, this is why I need a producer. And so I'm looking for a bunch of different folks to be able to do that. And it's tough to do because we're running out of time, you know, 7 to 10 in the morning when a lot of people are busy. So anyway, we shall... doing more messages here. Guys, I'm doing a show. Let me do my show. Stop talking to me. Isn't this crazy? All right. So here we go. All right. Let me just leave my phone aside, do my show, get myself a producer, and then they can handle all this stuff when it comes in. Otherwise, I'm going to go crazy. All right. So back to the agenda. So what could the Geldings do? What could they do that they're not doing now? Well, a bunch of things. First of all, they could have another committee, a committee to handle the reversal or actually, you know, tell the true story of what happened January 6th. So the Democrats basically had a fantasy movie production of the way they wanted things to be. That we should have called that the wishful thinking committee. All right. So we need a real committee on the stolen election. That already should have started. It should have started the day after Congress, the new session started with the Republican majority. But they won't as long as Kevin McDeep State's there. So Kevin McCarthy is going to stop that because he's part of the deep state. Second thing they could have done was a daily update from the D.C. Gulag, the prison where all of the folks are hiding, where the political prisoners are being kept for simply walking in to the Capitol or even being near the Capitol. They're all being thrown in jail. So the Democrat, you know, operatives that stole the government are doing just fine, and they're arresting people that were near the Capitol as the excuse and the cover for the real coup that took place. So the coup leaders, the coup enactors, the coup folks that actually stole the government are using the Trump supporters as cover to cover that they stole the government. So then we should have a daily update from the Gulag. Now, in the states, of course, the Republican governors should take their people, in other words, DeSantis, should take their Florida citizens out of the D.C. Gulag, saying you do not have jurisdiction over our citizens. They are not citizens of D.C. because D.C. is a district. It's not a state. And these citizens, these people are citizens of the state of Florida, and he should go in and get them, as should Kristi Noem of South Dakota and any other Republican governor should go in and literally, you know, with their National Guards, if necessary, and take their people out of the D.C. gulag. And that's how it should be done. And I'm telling you, even under force of arms, I mean, they've all got tanks and airplanes and things like that, and they need to take their people out of the D.C. gulag. That would be the proper thing to do at this point. We need a boycott list of the woke corporations. This is proving very effective. You look at Bud Light, you know, with Ms. Dillon, Ms. Dillon, you know, the man, you know, the wimpy little boy man who's trying to look like a little girl. That's working, and Bud Light sales have plummeted. In fact, there was just an article about Bud Light being in the gay pride parade somewhere, I think Chicago or something like that. And I guess they're trying to hide. So Bud Light, I guess you really are, you know, a bunch of folks that are not appealing to real straight Christian men anymore. You're much rather go for the LGBTQ PMS community. Okay, that's fine. I mean, if you want to market, you know, you're free to market to who you want to, but don't be surprised if regular guys stop buying your beer. Besides, light beer is for wimps anyway. Next one. The left should be absolutely defunded by the Republican Congress. And the way they do that, you think, well, gee, the Senate's in Democrat hands. How do they do that? Easy. All revenue bills start in the House. So unless the House Republicans vote as a majority fund something, it doesn't get funded because the Senate cannot start funding. They cannot initiate funding. So the only way any organization or thing or regulation or law can get funded is because the Republican House voted for it initially, because all revenue bills start in the House. So any money for climate change, for electric cars, any money for the totalitarian regulatory agencies, any of that stuff, all starts in the House. So the House under Kevin McDeepstate, in other words, Kevin McCarthy, could literally stop funding the left anytime they want, but they don't, because they're geldings. Next one, how come we don't have indictments or prosecutions of local DAs, of secretaries of state, of governors for stealing the election and changing election laws? Those people should all be in jail. Another thing they could do, daily press conference and briefing of the crimes and the propaganda of the left. In other words, they need a disinformation correction report every day. See, here's where the left lied to you, and here's the truth. They should be doing that. They should be supporting our legislation. In other words, our constitutional amendment, taking money away from Congress so they can't – well, actually taking the power of Congress to borrow money. They need to do that. They need to have our vaccine liability bill, you know, putting product liability back on Big Pharma. They need our big tech censorship bill to stop all censorship from big tech. I mean, Twitter is censoring me as much as ever. So I don't know what Elon Musk, you know, accomplished by spending $44 billion when he could have done a whole lot better spending $44 million promoting our bill to end big tech censorship. And that would have covered all of social media and search engines. Could have handled all the algorithms of search engines and all the shadow bans and all the restrictions and the community standards and the fact checks and everything else from social media. But they didn't do it. You know, we offered the bill. It's been out for 2 years now. Oh, well, they have not disarmed the bureaucrat army. So there are 287,000 armed bureaucrats, which is basically 14 divisions of infantry soldiers within the federal government, with the millions of guns and billions of rounds of ammunition. Well, since your bureaucrats only have jurisdiction over American citizens, that means that they are preparing for war with American citizens. They should be disarmed. Those guns need to be given back to the people since we paid for them through the Civilian Marksmanship Program, which only deals with U.S. citizens, and you have to prove you're a citizen. So that would be a decent program. They could do that. What else could they do? There's no cooperation connecting us to the Trump campaign. I've tried. You know, we have the best bills in the country. We have the most logical, straightforward, easy to understand, simple bills to bring our freedom back in so many different areas. And yet, even though I've had folks like Christina Bobb and Peter Navarro, I've had, you know, I'm in contact with Matt Gaetz, my congressman, different people associated with Trump and the Trump campaign. And yet not one person has seen fit to help us get connected to the Trump campaign. Yet we have the best ideas. I'm probably going to have more luck with Bobby Kennedy, to say the truth. I think we're going to have more luck connecting with Bobby Kennedy's campaign, Robert Francis Kennedy Jr., than we are with the Trump campaign. And yet, we're the folks, the free market folks. We're the constitutional folks. I need a name for us. Constitutional independent? Yeah, I mean, we need something. We need like a one-word description of who we are. I don't know, revolutionaries? Probably sounds like, this is a revolution. I mean, what we're talking about is a revolution, where the citizens actually write the bills that they consent to be governed by. That's a revolution. Don't kid yourself. It's peaceful. We can do it all by computer. The government may take up arms against us, and they may arrest us by force, and they may do all kinds of other nasty things, but we don't do it, and we have no need to do it. Besides, they got more guns because they've taken our tax dollars to buy them. I don't want to fight the federal government. I want to disarm them. You know, I don't want a shooting war with the federal government. I want to change the laws. I want to take their power away the old-fashioned way with better laws. You know, so, I mean, this is what I'm trying to do. All right, so where did I get these rather remarkable revolutionary ideas? Well, it came about because of this article I found. Now, again, you cannot search the old-fashioned way. You cannot use Google. You can't use DuckDuckGo. You can't even use so-called conservative search engines. They don't work. The only one I found that works is Yandex. It's up to Russia. It's fascinating to me that the best site for a conservative and realistic and revolutionary American thought, you know, back to our founding, is found in the Russian search engine, you know, Yandex. So I found this on Yandex. I wouldn't find it anywhere else. And this is the best article. John Daniel Davidson. Don't know who he is. He wrote this October 20th of 2022. So this would have been right before the 2022 election. You know, the one that was stolen. It was stolen from Kerry Lake. You know, I think Congress barely became Republican. I think that the Democrats screwed up. I think they're probably intending to steal it and keep it Democrat. I'm surprised they didn't, actually. I'm really surprised the Democrats didn't steal the House again, because the geldings wouldn't have done anything about it. They wouldn't have. They still haven't done anything about the 2020 election. Why would they do anything about 2022? God knows what's going to happen in 2024. We'll see. I mean, I hope Trump wins. I mean, the only reason he wouldn't win is because the election was stolen. Because nobody wants the Democrat plan. Nobody wants to be a Marxist country in this country, except genuine Marxists. And they represent, what, 15, 20% of the population? Well, that's not enough to win the White House. Anyway, I found this article, John Daniel Davidson, October 20th, 2022. We need to stop calling ourselves conservatives. It's in the Federalist. Great article. Guess who I want on the show? I want this guy on the show. I want to tell him what we're doing here. Because he's calling for a new American Revolution, which is part of the title of the show today. And guess what? We started one here. That's what Action Radio is all about. The new peaceful revolution. So he says the conservative project has failed and conservatives need to forge a new political identity that reflects our revolutionary movement. How about that? He says, given the state of America in 2022, conservatives should stop calling themselves conservatives. This I found fascinating. Conservatives should stop calling themselves conservatives. Why? Because the conservative project has largely failed and it is time for a new approach. No kidding. Conservatives have long defined their politics in terms of what they wish to conserve or preserve, which I've talked about too. Individual rights, family values, religious freedom, and so on, blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah was my addition. Conservatives, we are told, want to preserve the rich traditions and civilizational achievements of the past, pass them on to the next generation, and defend them from the left. In America, conservatives and classical liberals alike rightly believe an ascendant left wants to dismantle our constitutional system. Yeah, that's true, by the way. And transform America into a woke dystopia. No, they want to transform us into a Marxist dictatorship. Yeah, the woke dystopia is just a fringe benefit, right? They say that he says the task of conservatives going back many decades now has been to stop them. Yeah, sure has. Of course, they're not. Well, I don't know if their task has been to stop them so much as that's been kind of like a talking point. We need to stop the left. We need to take our country back. Do you intend to take our country back? No. We just intend to say it. And that's the truth. So they'll talk a good game. It's like Reagan. Reagan talked a good game, but the things he accomplished were pitifully small. Oh, boy, that stick in the craw of the all the folks. We shall see. Yeah, just sending another quick message. I can't believe I'm sending messages during my show. I apologize for that. Things are busy. All right. Then he says, in an earlier era, this made sense. There was much to conserve, but any honest appraisal of our situation today renders such a definition absurd. After all, what have conservatives succeeded in conserving? Yeah, no kidding. In just my lifetime, they have lost much. Marriage, as it has been understood for thousands of years, the First Amendment, any semblance of control over our borders, a fundamental distinction between men and women, and especially of late, the basic rule of law. Calling oneself a conservative in today's political climate would be like saying one is a conservative because one wants to preserve the medieval European traditions of arranged marriage and trial by combat. Whatever the merits of those practices, you cannot preserve or defend something that is dead. Perhaps you can retain a memory of it or knowledge of it, but that is not what conservatism was purportedly about. It was about maintaining traditions and preserving Western civilization as a living and vibrant thing. Yeah, conservatives literally want to conserve. They want to preserve what is or what was. Well, that doesn't work in an activist left, which wants to destroy what is and are actively doing it. Okay, it's not good enough anymore, right? It's like journalism. You know, I talk about journalism and activism. You know, people accuse me and say, well, do you call yourself a journalist? No, I don't. Actually, I call myself an activist. Well, but you're doing a show. You're a journalist. You're supposed to report. No, that's your definition. I've long since abandoned that. There's no journalism anymore. Journalism is dead. Let's say this quite bluntly. Journalism is dead. There are only leftist activists and conservatives living in the past. That's what news breaks. You look at all the conservative talk shows and all the conservative media and all this kind of stuff, and they don't say the same thing. You know, we need to do this. They're reporting the news. They're trying to be objective. Well, the left is not objective. The left is activist. Well, the only way to combat an activist, leftist, Marxist, you know, media is with a conservative, well, I got to stop using that word, is with an American first revolutionary, you know, directed media response and a succession and a succeeding one. And that's what we do here. That's what we need other places to do. Hopefully they'll follow our model, but apparently it's not happening yet because they're still calling themselves conservatives and living in the past that Daniel's talking about here. Let me get his name again here. John Daniel Davidson. Boy, that sounds like a white name, doesn't it? John Daniel Davidson. It should say the third after that. John Daniel Davidson the third. Okay, but it's not. It's just John Daniel Davidson. All right. So now he says, okay, here we go. Picking up the article. Well, he says, too late. Western civilization is dying. The traditions and practices that conservatives champion are at best being preserved only in the ever-shrinking private sphere. At worst, they are being trampled to dust. They certainly do not form the basis of our common culture or civic life as they did for most of our nation's history. To talk now of, quote, family values is to assume that there are enough Americans able and willing to marry and raise children together for something like family values to matter in the public discourse, much less in the halls of power. To talk of defending, quote, religious freedom, unquote, is to misapprehend that the real risk today is widespread irreligion, which will leave so few religious Americans in the coming generations that the government and large corporations will inevitably and easily persecute them. Yeah, when the religious minority becomes such a small minority as to not be able to fight back, we got problems. He says conservatives are still invoking these things as if they are magic incantations that can roll back time, just as they did during the crucial decades of the past half century when a cultural and technological revolution was remaking America before their eyes, and they did nothing to stop it. So this is part I found interesting. This is something I thought about a lot of this earlier stuff. I had not thought about this. This was new, that the idea that a technological revolution was remaking America, and the conservative Republican crowd was doing nothing about it. He says, in a recent essay for Compact, John Askonas, A-S-K-O-N-A-S, argues convincingly that the conservative project failed because, quote, it didn't take into account the revolutionary principle of technology and its intrinsic connection to the telos of sheer profit. Telos, that's one of those $1 million. Let's look it up. You know, I love people that use words that I have no comprehension of and generally don't use in regular conversations. Let's find out what it is. Telos. An ultimate objective or aim in the hedonistic life. Yeah, that makes sense. People lose some moral purpose, a telos, which provides moral justification for society. In other words, it's a poor excuse. You know, in other words, they can do it anyway. I will replace telos with the word rationalization because they're rationalizing it's okay. It's like the technocrats or the transhuman, you know, technology folks, you know, from brain shift to we're going to control your life. I was listening to Glenn Beck yesterday, a fascinating guest on. And was talking about somebody they met 15 years ago, a futurist, who said that they're going to have brain chips and they're going to have all this merging of human beings and technology, and it's going to be great, you know, and everything will be socially controlled and social credit and the whole bit. Explained basically what they're doing now. And of course, Glenn, you know, asked him like 15 years ago. I said, well, what if somebody, you know, falls out of favor? You know, if we're dependent on you guys for our life, you know, if you can turn on and turn off our brains and circuits, you know, then, you know, because we're all connected to this big, you know, like a Borg system. And the Borg was actually fascinating. That's really where these people want to go. Transhuman, you know, part of the collective. Resistance is futile, right? The Borg is very much of a description of our future. Somebody had their you know, eye on the future. Anyway, so Glenn's friend, the futurist, says, well, you know, when it comes to, you know, turning people off, he says, we would never do that. Of course, my thinking was, of course you would. You know, the evidence of human power and decadence shows very clearly that anything that can be done usually is done. You know, it's like the old line in Jurassic Park when Jeff Goldblum says, you know, you only asked if you could. You never asked if you should, you know, and that's how things work with the gain of function. Can we make a virus more powerful and deadly? Well, let's do it. You know, this would be great. We'll make more money on the vaccine. So the question of could and should is irrelevant to those that want power. It's always could. If you can, they're going to do it. You know, if the Germans can have a Holocaust, they're going to exterminate millions of people. You know, if Genghis Khan could conquer the world with swords, he's going to do it. Swords and arrows. Yeah. I mean, most people do what they, you know, if the Marxists can take over the United States, destroy our constitution and turn us into, you know, the worst bastion of terror and dictatorship, they're going to do it. Why? Because they can. There's no logic. There's no control. There's no rationality. There's no discussion. There's no virtue. There's no human integrity in this. It's just because they can. So they're going to. So get used to it and do something about it. Back to the article. So it didn't take into account the revolutionary principle of technology, and so technology becomes a revolutionary principle unto itself, according to this article, which is interesting. Conservatives, he says, were too obsessed with, quote, left-wing revolutionary politics and misread the real threat, which was technological change so swift and powerful it fundamentally reordered society, swept tradition aside, and unleashed a moral relativism that rendered the conservative project obsolete. Basically, conservatism is dead. Now, see, I welcome the technology because for me, it opened up a whole new world. You know, when I was young, most people lied to me. Parents, teachers, jobs, you know, pretty much everybody lied to me. And it was hard to tell the lies from the truth because so much of what I heard was lies. It wasn't until the internet came along that I actually got the real story. Oh, yeah, military recruiters, too. Let's put them in. Everybody lied to me. Everybody. Priests, you know, teachers in three different countries. You know, I got lied to a lot. And I think most of us did. And you don't realize, you know, how much you've been lied to until you get the internet and you can start verifying things. So the internet for me was a godsend. It's like, oh, now I can look for the truth. So now I can ask questions that nobody else is asking, like what kills viruses? Back in February of 2020, when I asked that question, I realized that Dr. Fascist was exactly who he is, fascist, that he was using the government to kill, you know, who knows how many million people. He killed a million. I mean, he could have killed a lot more. You know, by denying early treatments, by denying things that worked, by denying the information on things that worked, so he could direct everybody into something that never would have been legal under normal circumstances, which was the COVID jab. COVID jab would never have been legal because the law specifically said you cannot use something experimental when something already here and approved works. And the things that were already here and approved were zinc, hydroxychloroquine, and ivermectin, vitamin C, vitamin D. They worked. They stopped COVID cold. Well, you couldn't have that because if we had something that works, you couldn't have your experimental drug. And the whole point of that law was to prevent exactly what happened, you know, making the legal products illegal so that the illegal products could be legal. And the result is a million people died and more will die. The reason the million people died was so that they could, you know, create the fear to clear the way for the COVID jab so that who knows how many other millions could die. And that's what it's all about. But we had the laws to prevent it, but they weren't enforced. The Constitution wasn't enforced. So the reason all this happened was because the Constitution was not enforced, that rights were limited. Well, it's a public health emergency. We can limit rights. No, you can't. And the conservatives never fought back. Even our own Governor DeSantis here in Florida didn't fight back until later. Initially, he locked down the schools. He locked down the beaches and parks. He told people to stay home. You'd be safer at home, which is a bunch of BS. Actually, it was the least safe thing you could do. You know, wear masks. All these things were designed to preserve COVID and keep it in the population. Because these people are smart enough to know that if we had everybody out in the fresh air, that if people got COVID and got over it quickly, there'd be nowhere for COVID to go, and it would have been gone in about 6 to 8 weeks, which pretty much would happen. Well, then they brought it back with the mandates and the lockdowns and the masks and everything else. They actually brought COVID back. It was gone by July of 2020. You know, I've got the CDC chart to prove it. I put it on my my show slides every day. It's right there. You know, you want to challenge it? It's the CDC chart that said that COVID started in January of 2020 and was pretty much gone. The death rate was zero by July of 2020. It's right there on my slides. Not on this show because we're still live, but look at any previous show. Go back to yesterday's show or Monday's show. It's right there, COVID chart. You know, I keep posting it. Nobody reacts to it, though, which is quite fascinating. All right, so let's get back to the article here. He says, instead of questioning these technologies, social media and search engines, you know, Google and Facebook, right? Asking whether they would contribute to human flourishing, conservatives acquiesced to their inevitability and focused instead on narrower issues. Maybe it's not smart enough to comprehend what's going on. That could be too, right? Or they just don't want to get out of their comfort zone, which is being losers. Conservatives and Republicans are really happy being losers, really happy. They love being losers. because they worked so hard to be losers. When the Democrats stole the House of Representatives in 2018, did the Republicans challenge the fact that 7 Republican seats were overturned after the election weeks later with ballots that showed up? Oh, boy, found more ballots. Okay, I guess those are all right. We'll let them in. No, they didn't, because they're geldings, because they don't care. They want to be losers. Always look at the Republican Party as a party that wants to be losers. They're not comfortable leading. They don't know what to do with it. They want their privilege. They want to be they're like pets. So the Republicans are like pets of the Democrats. So they're kept warm and comfortable, and they get the privilege, and they get to go on their trips, and they get to maintain their office, and they can even ask occasional tough questions. But for the most part, the real power, the Speaker, he's not going to do anything. You got some really good people in Congress, my congressman in particular, Matt Gaetz. James Comer right now, who's investigating all the Biden bribes and all Hunter Biden corruption. Doing a great job. The question is whether he'll be able to actually prosecute by getting, when Trump takes over, to get the DOJ to really throw these folks in jail for the rest of their lives, which is where they belong. I don't know. I'll have to wait and see on that one. Article says, instead of questioning these technologies, asking whether they would contribute to human... Oh, I already read that. Anyway, it says let me start the paragraph again so we can keep it in context. He says, instead of questioning these technologies, asking whether they would contribute to human flourishing, conservatives acquiesce to their inevitability and focus instead on narrower issues. The result has been the transformation of society within the span of a single human lifetime, and with it, the wholesale destruction of our traditions and the looming implosion of Western civilization. See, I don't think it's that bad. I think that as long as there are those of us who are living, breathing, and understand Western civilization, which is what the leftists call white supremacy, okay? Western civilization, the Judeo-Christian ethic, tradition, and religion is white supremacy to these people. That's what they're talking about. So what they're really talking about is the supremacy of marriage, honor, integrity, family, God, country, nationalism, freedom, independence, individual rights, limited government, a constitution, and free markets. That's Western civilization. That's what they call white supremacy. So it's not white people. You know, they lie when they say, well, it's all about white people deporting all the minorities, you know, somewhere. No, that's not what they're talking. That's not the real. That's the cover story. The reality, when the left talks about white supremacy or white nationalism, they're really talking about Western civilization and the supremacy of the idea that the individual is the most important component in society, whose rights need to be protected and honored, and whose property is freely accumulated by those individuals. That is what they term white supremacy. Article says, while it might be necessary, as Asconis argues, to enact a serious program of technological development to build a future that supports human flourishing, it is also the case that to do so on a scale sufficient to save our country will require political power and the willingness to use it. Okay, this is where it gets interesting. This is how it gets interesting, because it does the same thing that, this is sound arrogant. I'm trying not to. But then I realize that political power, I don't have a problem with big government as long as being government is enforcing freedom. My problem is the big government is enforcing tyranny. So you limit government to enforcing freedom, and you take away its power to enforce tyranny. See, that's the difference. So that would involve getting rid of the Department of Education, the State Department, most of the regulatory agencies, turning most of that stuff back to the states, and keep the things that they should do, which is maintaining freedom. You know, it's like when Eisenhower called the National Guard out to get black students into Ole Miss, you know, University of Mississippi. Interesting idea. I got to think about it. I got to read more about that, because it's an interesting use of power. But the thing is, he used the military to enforce freedom. Well, that's not a bad idea. You know, sometimes you have to use the military to enforce freedom. What the state of Texas National Guard should have surrounded the FBI ATF at Waco and told them to lay down their arms and get the hell out of there, or they're going to be killed right there on the spot. That's what they should have done. I would have, as governor. I would have surrounded the whole ATF operation. The federal government, they might have wanted to send in more, send in the whole military. So be it. Then I'll ask the other states to send in their National Guards, and away we go. You can't allow the federal government to kill an entire community of your citizens in your state. You can't do that. Yet they did. Bill Clinton's still running free. He still hasn't been brought to justice. So when talking about using government power, there is all kinds of government power. There's federal power, there's state power, there's local power. And there are times to use it and times to limit it. Well, now it's time to use it for freedom. That's what we advocate here. using the federal, state, and local governments for the purpose of advocating and maintaining freedom. I've said this for a long time. Freedom has to be imposed just as much as tyranny. Except that we're the good guys, so it's okay. You know, I mean, call that a rationalization, call it whatever you want. Freedom. How do you think this country got started? We're in an emergency. We're in a war with England over our independence, over our entire nationhood. And two-thirds of the people couldn't have cared less. One-third were loyalists. They were loyal to the crown, a lot of which went to Canada. One-third were, you know, watching the equivalent of football and drinking beer. They didn't care. And one-third actually saved this country. Well, the same thing's going to happen now. You know, if I can get one-third of the people working positively on citizen legislation and enforcing a change of freedom so that we open up the laws so that they're good for regular folks and we limit the special interests rather than the laws being good for special interests that limit the regular folks, you know, we're going to be all set. If we can write laws that completely ban, obscure, get rid of, and ignore any international organization, the UN, the WHO, you know, all those folks, that's what we need to do. The idea that some occupant of the White House, you know, who stole the election can give away our power to some international agency is abhorrent. It should be disgusting. It should be repugnant. It should be something that makes you feel sick to your stomach that can possibly happen. And yet people are like, oh no, we have to stop Brandon from giving away all our power. Well, he can't do that. He doesn't have that power unless you give it to him. Back to the article. While it might be necessary, as Asconis argues, to enact a serious program of technological development to build a future that supports human flourishing, it is also the case that to do so on a scale sufficient to save our country, I read this, I'm sorry, will require political power and the willingness to use it. So let's see what he says then. So what kind of politics should conservatives today, as inheritors of a failed movement, adopt? Good question. For starters, they should stop thinking of themselves as conservatives. Of course, I haven't thought of myself in that for a long time, much as Republicans. I don't think of myself as a Republican either. You know, I'm a constitutional independent. Or I might also just call myself a revolutionary. I'm an American first revolutionary. I like that. Or I'm a founding revolutionary. Because basically what we're doing, most of what we do here goes back to our founding. It's still the basic principles of freedom and not democracy, a republic. You know, free markets and a republic. That's what we're talking about. All right? Anyway, so for starters, they should stop thinking of themselves as conservatives, much less as Republicans, and start thinking of themselves as radicals, restorationists, there's a new term, I hadn't heard that before, and counter-revolutionaries. I don't think of myself as a counter-revolutionary. I think of myself as a revolutionary in the same tradition as our founding fathers, in the sense that we are throwing off a tyrannical occupation government. They threw off a foreign government. We're trying to throw off our own government that has become a tyrannical occupying power. That's why I wrote the article, The Nation of Government, which describes Washington as a country and the states as colonies, where the colonies have to pay for their own occupation by the Nation of Government. It's quite a fascinating article. Anyway, he says, indeed, that is what they are, in other words, we are, whether they embrace those labels or not. Well, I do embrace those labels. So a restorationist, I'm guessing that means restoring the original founding principles as this country was supposed to be. Let's look up restorationist. Use my online dictionary, which is not always adequate, but it's the best I have at this time. Restorationist. Here's what Marco thinks of all this in the Netherlands. I'll ask him in a minute. I'll ask him now, and maybe he can type an answer. Restoration. Oh, I know that. What's a restorationist? Restoration, I already know. The action of returning something to a former owner, place, or condition. So a restorationist would want to restore the United States to its former condition of freedom as of 1776. That's me. So the process of repairing, renovating, the reinstatement of... Okay, here's another one. The reinstatement of a previous practice, right, custom, or situation. Yep. Our founding. Oh, this is the restoration of capital punishment. Well, that's not exactly what I had in mind. Dentistry? Nope. The return of a hereditary monarch to the throne. Well, that's what they want to do. A head of state to government or regime to power. The restoration of a democratic government. Well, that's what we got now, democratic government. Take a look at it. Here's your democracy, folks. It's a tyranny, just as we have been saying for decades. So the restoration is the return of a hereditary monarch to the throne. That's an interesting definition. Exactly the opposite of what we need. I like the one up here. It talks about the action of returning something to a former condition. That would be a condition of freedom that we used to have in this country. Huh. Oh, they said about the restoration as the reestablishment of Charles II as King of England. Well, you know what happened to Charles I? He was beheaded by Cromwell and the Patriots. So, nope, you cannot be king because you believe in a divine right of kings. You believe the king is actually God and can do no wrong. What an idiot. No wonder he lost his head. Now, I'm not a big fan of beheading, especially with an axe, because it's pretty barbaric. And that's why the French used a sword and then the guillotine. Dr. Guillotine invented the guillotine because, you know, if they're going to lop off heads, they want to do it in a way that's quick and clean and you know, relatively painless. You know, the beheading by the axe, what, it's probably not the right word. What are those things called? Yeah, the chopping block? No, I think it was an axe. Yeah, pretty barbaric. Didn't always work the first time. I'm not going to go into that more. Anyway, let's go back to the article. Supposed to be a 9-minute article. I think I've been on for like 25 minutes already. He says they might. Oh, let's caught up. So let's think of ourselves not as conservatives, much less as Republicans, and start thinking of ourselves, which I do already, as radicals, restorationists, and counter-revolutionaries. Sounds about right. I'm not a counter-revolutionary. I'm a revolutionary. Same American Revolution. We're just repeating it. Repeating it 250 years later. Because most nations only last a couple hundred years. So now that we're 250 years into this, it's time for us to reestablish America as it was at our founding in 1776 with the same principles, on the same laws, where the people write the laws that we consent to be governed by. So I am, in effect, a revolutionary. Hear that, FBI? By the way, how come I haven't been arrested yet for subversion or sedition or any of those things? I'm feeling left out here, guys. Everybody else gets arrested, but me? Nope. Not there. Just a... No, that's okay. Maybe one day. Can't wait. It's going to be fun. I want my turn. Then I can report on it. It should be funny. I don't take this lightly. No, I don't. I mean, you know, who knows? They might, you know, shoot me on the way and say, well, don't need him. Oh, he was trying to escape. Yeah, right. All right. So let's get, no, are you kidding? I wouldn't miss the chance of the sarcasm. I really want to talk to those FBI stooges. You know, the ones that would show up here in the flak jackets and all the others to arrest poor little me. At 63 years old, I bet you I'm such a threat, right? But I've still got my brain, you know, unless they drug me. But yeah, so I'd be curious to talk to them. And, you know, why are you guys just following orders? You know, what's really going on here? I said, don't you want your freedom? You know, say, aren't you ashamed of yourselves? These are the kind of things I'd ask. And they say, well, we have a bunch of questions to ask you. I say, well, I can't answer. Why not? Well, because I have an ongoing investigation. Like I said, I'm already preparing my answers for the FBI, KGB when they show up. All right, back to counter-revolutionaries, restorationists, and radicals. Here we go. He says they might, looking to American history for inspiration, which I do all the time, conjure up the image of the pilgrims, I don't, but that's okay, he does. The image of the pilgrims, those iron-willed and audacious Christians who refused to accept the terms set by the mainstream, I could say mainstream media here, of their time and set out to build something entirely new, to hew, that's a good word, H-E-W, hew it out of the wilderness of the new world, even at great personal cost. Well, yeah, in many ways, yeah, that's us. And that's us at Action Radio. We're saying that, no, we're not going to accept the special interest buying laws from the government to control the people. We accept laws written by we the people, which we send through government and lobby for, to control the special interests. So reversing the process. That's revolutionary, by the way. Next, he says, or they might claim the mantle of revolutionaries. I've already done that. Invoking the Founding Fathers' view, or at least Thomas Jefferson's, that periodic revolution to preserve liberty and civil society has always been and always will be necessary. See, that's really interesting. I'm going to click on that part once I get through the article. Well, let's click on it now and see where I get. I always come back to this part. Let's see what Thomas Jefferson said. Click on the thing. Ooh, Founders Online. Ooh, I found a new group, Founders Online. The James Madison from Thomas Jefferson, 6th of September, 1789. Dear sir, I sit down to write to you without knowing by what occasion I shall send my letter. I do it because a subject comes into my head which I would wish to develop a little more than is practicable in the hurry of the moment of making up general dispatches. Oh, this is really interesting. I'll probably do a show on this. Well, that's a long letter. Jeez, and he wrote with a feather quill pen. I'll just give you the first question. The question, whether one generation of men has a right to bind another, seems never to have been started either on this or our side of the water. Yet it is a question of such consequence as not only to merit decision, but also among the fundamental principles of every government. Well, I've got to come back to that. That's interesting. Back to the article I started with. Or they might claim the mantle of revolutionaries, which I do. Then it says that, okay, where I read that. He says, whatever the term or image, the imperative that conservatives must break from the past and forge a new political identity cannot be overstated. Okay, we've already done that, dude. This is why I want him on the show, right? He says, it is, wow, gee, I'm so 7:45 already? Wow. He says, it is time now for something new, for a new way of thinking and speaking about what conservative politics should be. Well, see, I've abandoned conservative politics. I'm talking about revolutionary America First original principles. That's what the show is about. He says the fusionism, is that a word, fusionism, of past decades in which conservatives made common cause with market-obsessed libertarians and foreign policy neocons is finished. Yeah, the neocons, you know, I've got a theory about that. We'll be doing some kind of a show or a discussion on that too. So the neocons have a really great strategy. They pay billions of dollars to totally destroy a country and then say, well, we have to rebuild them. So they get billions of dollars in contracts to rebuild them. See, they still win. They pay for destruction and they get paid for the destruction and they get paid for the rebuilding. This is going on in Afghanistan right now. I got an article here, which I'll get to at some point this week. Now, I already have enough articles for the whole week. The whole week's already prepped. It's just a question of getting to the articles, right? And so it's fascinating that Afghanistan right now is getting billions of dollars still. Why would Brandon give billions of dollars to Afghanistan after we surrendered, after he surrendered, and gave all our weapons to, you know, the Taliban under orders from Obama? Oh, I'm sure I can't prove it yet, but I know that's what happened. Why else would Brandon surrender? Because he was told to. Basically, everything happens because he's told to. I'll get into the media in a little bit. That's going to be fascinating. I'll save that for Jonathan. Talk about why the media is turning on Brandon, because they're just following orders of Obama. Obama's running the country. We're under an Obama dictatorship with Brandon as a figurehead, you know, basically run by Marxist Muslim totalitarians who are dictating everything that's happening right now through the regulatory agencies to control us. Well, some of us object, namely me. Anyway, he says the fusionism of past decades in which conservatives made common cause with market-obsessed libertarians. That's funny. Free market, open borders, libertarians. These people would crack me up. Foreign policy neocons. Yeah. Pay for the war, pay for the rebuilding. Great deal. It's like the business model for big fascist pharma. Well, I like that title. I just came up with that. Big fascist pharma, which is to scare the hell out of everybody to take vaccines, which ruin their immune system, which caused the need for more vaccines. It's a self-perpetuating market. Why would you get a flu shot every year? Why isn't one flu shot good enough to teach your body how to adapt to all the different flu viruses as they come along? Oh, gee, well, you know, Greg, that's not quite scientific. Every year, you know, a new flu bug comes and we have to have a new flu shot for the new flu bug. We get it wrong most of the time, you stupid idiots. Besides, these things mutate. That's why your immune system is flexible. But, quote, vaccines are not. But one thing they do through the adjuvants, and this is what I learned from Robert Francis Kennedy, the adjuvants, aluminum, you know, the things that give you Alzheimer's, right? Autism, all that kind of stuff, allergies. The three A's, Alzheimer's, autism, and allergies, the three A's from non-vaccines, is that they destroy your immune system. You know, that's like food that makes you hungry. I don't know. How about salt? You know, so why do the movie theaters advertise popcorn with lots of salt? So you get thirsty. What do you when you get thirsty? You drink a soda. What are one of the ingredients in sodas? Salt. Which makes you more thirsty. It's a self-marketing system. You know, the so-called vaccine is a self-marketing system because the vaccine destroys your immune system. The very thing they tell you is boosting. And you get a booster. Why would you need a booster if you already got the vaccine? Why would you need more of something if the first one, you know, changes your DNA and helps you adapt to a new virus? You should need a booster. In fact, a booster boosters prove that it doesn't work. You know, this is fun. And people don't see that. This stuff is so obvious to me. It like screams in my face. Boosters are needed because the original vaccine didn't work, you know, and because the boosters don't work either. But the boosters do what they're supposed to do. Kill enough people to scare you into taking more vaccines. And the vaccines themselves destroy your immune system. So everybody gets sick. Why do you think people who get COVID now all have had the jab? Why do you think the people that got COVID, got over it, never took a jab, have never been sick again, like me? I got COVID beginning of January 2020. I literally have not even had a cold since, except once for like 3 days. That's 3 years. I'd never go through a year without getting a cold for a week or so. But I'll tell you, this is one of the byproducts of COVID. as it makes for those of us that didn't take a jab, we've got really good immune systems right now. I didn't check that out anecdotally. I should call Rebecca Hardy, Texans for Vaccine Choice, or some other friends I have. Have they noticed that people that got over COVID naturally have much stronger immune systems? Let me ask Marco. Hey, Marco, what's going on in the Netherlands? Is there any studies on this that people, Marco in the Netherlands, he listens in the afternoon. It's great. Is there any studies of people that show that people who got COVID early, used natural immunity, which really works well, got over COVID, have even stronger immune systems because our systems are now adapted to bioweapons? I need to look that up. That'd be a great question. Yeah, I'm not going to write it down. I thought of it. I took it up breaks already in the beginning. But I want to finish this article before Jonathan gets here, and we're not, we got a ways to go. I think it's the commentary that I have so much fun with. All right. He says, whatever the term or image, the imperative that conservatives must break from the past and forge a new political identity cannot be overstated. It is time now for something new. Action radio. I'll pull a Biden on you. Action radio is something new. Anyway, it is time for something new, for a new way of thinking. That's us too. And speaking about what conservative politics should be. Bingo. We hit the trifecta. Something new, new way of thinking, and speaking about it. That is exactly the definition of Action Radio. So, dude, we're already here, and we've been doing it for 5 years. All right, then he said, actually 6 years, if you count my time at WBY. Learning my craft, learning how to be a revolutionary. Peaceful, but a revolutionary. He says, the fusionism of past, oh, I think I read that before because there's that word again. The fusionism of past decades in which conservatives made common cause with, oh, I read that too, but that other part was really cool to read. Oh, here we go. So, too, is Conservatism, Inc., in other words, Conservatism Incorporated, and the establishment GOP it enabled, whose first priority was always tax cuts for big business at the expense of everything else. Let me say that again. The GOP and Conservatives, Inc., the first priority was always tax cuts for big business at the expense of everything else. The election of Donald Trump in 2016 heralded a populist wave at the end of Republican politics as we knew it. And now we are in uncharted waters. Well, I don't mind. I'm actually charting the uncharted waters. It's kind of fun. He says, to be sure, there has been plenty of talk on the right lately about what should be done differently now. Well, right. They're just talking. Some, such as Sohrab Ahmari, Gladden Papin, Adrian Vermeule, along with a larger cohort of conservative Catholic thinkers, advocate a conservatism that is comfortable with big government and, in fact, sees it as necessary not only for the common good, you know what I think of the common good, right? But to tame what Al-Mahdi recently called the private tyranny of woke corporations empowered by unrestrained market forces. Well, that's a mouthful. Conservative Catholics, he argues, should today, that'd be like Steve Bannon, conservative Catholics should today claim ownership of a pro-worker, even pro-union political agenda that once belonged to the left and which produced generations of Democrat-voting Catholic workers. Duh. Why do you think most of the folks here are just regular average folks? Why do you think we don't have celebrities or party leaders or, you know, occasionally we have public figures? But for the most part, this show is run by regular people. Me? I'm a regular person. All the reporters? None of us are famous yet. We might be. But the thing is that I've always been pro-union. Private union, not government unions. Government unions are illegal, even though we have them. But Trump can fix that with an executive order. The only reason we have government unions like SIEU and teachers unions, federal teachers unions, is because John Kennedy signed an executive order bringing them into existence. Well, Trump could take them right again, and he has to. We'll see, though. But I've never had a problem with pro-union private unions. I used to be a Teamster. I know it well. I went to meetings, and they talked about, well, we have to support the Democrat Party. Why? They're a bunch of tyrants, and I don't support the Republican Party either. Give me some good candidates. Why don't the Teamsters run their own person? Wouldn't that be interesting? Have a Labor Party, a real Labor Party. You know, Teamsters and AFL-CIO. And let's see if they – well, Teamsters would be more interesting because they're a lot more conservative. Teamsters endorsed Richard Nixon. I think they endorsed Ronald Reagan too. Teamsters are an interesting bunch. I like the Teamsters because they've been around since, you know, the horse and wagon days, since the 1800s. That's why their emblem is two horses with a big bridle from a stagecoach on it. So Teamsters are a very independent bunch. And you look at the although the membership is dedicated Marxist Democrats – I mean, the leadership as Democratic Marxist, you know, Democrats, the membership of the Teamsters is much more conservative. So, yeah, I have nothing wrong with pro-union. And the reason is because unions do what sports, you know, negotiators and all those other folks do. They advocate for their clients, what lawyers do. A union is basically a client advocate system. Well, who are the clients? Working people. Because working people deserve representation when dealing with management. So I've never had a problem with this. In fact, if I did, I wouldn't have been a Teamster. So what do unions get? Well, they get much better pay and benefits and working conditions and contracts and safety contracts. And unions have given us things like the 8-hour day, vacations, overtime at time and a half at least or double time, holidays, all kinds of stuff. Biggest one being the 8-hour day. People died for the 8-hour day. So I've never had a problem with unions, private unions, because there's no way that one person can have any kind of equality against a corporation. So the corporations bargain collectively. All the management has the same management policy. They all bargain collectively. Well, one person doesn't stand a chance against that, but a union does. So when a union bargains with a company management, they're on a much more equal basis. That's a good thing. Freedom of association. I don't have any problem with workers being paid more. They should be paid more. Considering how much the government people make, and a lot of folks make, especially the government people. Anyway, that's another story. So pro-union political agenda that once belonged to the left, never should have done that, and which produced generations of Democrat-voting Catholic workers. I'm not sure why he focuses on Catholics particularly, but I'll have to look more into that. Anyway, he says, indeed, a willingness to embrace government power has been a topic of fruitful debate on the, quote, new right in recent years. Oh, this is interesting. I'm not sure about the new right. I'll have to look that up. New right. Let me write that down. What is the new right? But compared to the old right? The old right isn't working. What's the new right? And that's not neocons, because neocons, again, the purpose of a neocon is to go to war with a country, spend billions of dollars to reward your friend financially so they'll pay you and you'll have a good job when you get out of government, and then to rebuild the country by spending millions more dollars there. So that's how it works, right? So you spend millions of dollars, billions of dollars, so that you, to create a war so that you can spend billions more dollars repairing the country after the war. And then if you start a war again, you can do the whole cycle again. Neat, huh? I was going to write down something. 23, there we go. I'm writing the date of the show down. So let's call this new right. What is the new right? So now I'm curious. All right. The new right. He says, in recent years, here we go. He says, however uncomfortable traditional small government conservatives might be with Amari's, A-H-M-A-R-I apostrophe S, argument, it is more or less true. Put bluntly, if conservatives want to save the country, they're going to have to rebuild and, in a sense, refund it. Bingo. That is exactly why I started Action Radio. Exactly. To rebuild and refound the country based on our original principles and to bring the government into compliance with the Constitution and live as we were supposed to live as free people. That's exactly what we do here. Then he says to rebuild and in a sense refound it. And that means, here we go, big red letters, getting used to the idea of wielding power, not despising it. Why? Because accommodation or compromise with the left is impossible. One need only consider the speed with which the discourse shifted on gay marriage from assuring conservatives ahead of the 2015 Obergefell decision that gay Americans were only asking for, quote, toleration, to the never-ending persecution of Jack Phillips. I'm not sure who Jack Phillips is, but I need to look at the Obergefell decision. Yeah, by the way, the Supreme Court has no power to impose gay marriage on this country any more than they had a power to impose abortion or impose Plyler B. Doe, that Americans have to pay for the education of foreign nationals, illegal aliens in our schools, because that is a grant of both foreign aid and amnesty, neither of which the Supreme Court has the power to do. Okay, so Marco checks in and he says, if there is any news that natural immunity is better than the jabs, it's most likely suppressed. Yeah, that's very true. But you never know, Marco. The studies, I found the study by Didier Raoult way early in I think February of 2020 that chloroquine cures COVID. That's how I wrote my bill on February 27th that Congress could only spend half their money on vaccines. The other half had to be spent on early treatments because I already knew about the early treatments. I'm not clairvoyant. I just read the study. Read the study from Marseille, France, and then I got to know Dr. Zelenko. I read his protocol. I went, oh, that makes sense. Especially when I found out he was saving thousands of lives. So if they're saving lives in Marseille, France, and they're saving lives up in upstate New York, where Dr. Zelenko originally practiced, I think he ended up in Florida before he passed on. Everybody ends up in Florida before they pass on, right? Anyway, so but to the, there's probably some studies out there, and if not, we should commission one. Oh, that'd be interesting. I have friends. I know exactly. You know who would do that? I bet you Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's been on the show regularly, would do that. Do a study of what of the proportion or what happens to people that got over COVID with natural immunity. Did that transfer to getting over COVID? I'm going to write that down too. So study. She would know. Let me talk to Judy after the show. Do COVID immune naturally? Naturally, in a that's what happens. I'm trying to write too fast. Hang on. Naturally. I'm at the bottom of the page. Even worse. Have immunity to other things. Better immunity. Immunity to other things. There we go. So basically, what I'm saying is, Jonathan. Yeah, let me bring him right now. I'm just going to continue finishing up my point here. But the point is that the study would be: do people that got over COVID the old-fashioned way, like me, just natural immunity, a couple of days rest, have a greater immunity to everything else? Because I haven't been sick since I got COVID, except for a cold for a couple of days, and that's only because I went to the hospital for that. Later age COVID check, colon check, excuse me, which is fine. I'm in great health, which is a good thing. But that's when I got sick, probably because I was in the hospital, exposed to all kinds of things, inside my body. But that's another story. All right, I'm going to hold this article up now just because but it's so fascinating. Let me ask Jonathan if he's had a chance. Jonathan, I always ask you the same question. You always give me the same answer because I know you're busy. But I've been going over this fascinating article, which I'll probably finish at some point in the show. We need to stop calling ourselves conservatives. It's in The Federalist. It's by John Daniel Davidson. I posted yesterday morning from October 20th, 2022. Have you ever read this? This is the most incredible article. It basically demands that Action Radio do what we do. The real hope is to get rid of conservatism and republicanism and start to using government to impose freedom on people with a new way of thinking. We need to become counter-revolutionaries, restorationists, and something else, they said. And I'm like, we're doing that now. Have you seen this article? This is fascinating. I never heard of it.
I can't. What?
Huh?
What is he arguing?
Oh, no, he says you'd have to listen to the first hour of the show, but basically the idea that conservatism is dead, that we need to move on. And he calls us, wait, let me see if I can find that paragraph. In other words, we need to stop saying that government power is bad and use it to basically impose freedom, which is what I talk about here. Let's see if I can find it, because he talks about
to impose freedom.
Well, it's a change. Well, it's probably oversimplifying it. I don't want to get into this just yet until I can fully finish here.
I probably haven't heard it, there's two different directions that I think that may take us. One is, of course, the philosophical debates of our founders, Thomas Jefferson and Madison and George Mason and all these others, that the idea that if all men were angels, there would be no need for government. But because they're not angels, I forget the entire quote, but basically that because men are not angels, the government is flawed. The idea that we need the government to respect and protect our rights,
mm-hmm.
is an essential part of what our philosophy is. I mean, our philosophy, our political philosophy, is much more even though the same founders argued that the government governs best, it governs least. But still, it's not, it's the arms of the government have to restrain the government. Yeah, beyond all doubt.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's what he's thinking.
Let me give you a couple of go ahead.
Or if he's basically, if he's basically quibbling with the word conservative, which No?
It's more than that. It's much more than that. Yeah. I kind of oversimplified. Let me give you a couple of quick things here of what he says. He says, so what kind of politics should conservatives today as inheritors of a failed movement adopt? He says, for starters, they should stop thinking of themselves as conservatives, much less as Republicans, and start thinking of themselves as radicals, restorationists, which is a word I hadn't heard before, and counter-revolutionaries. That is what they are, whether they embrace those labels or not. That's exactly how I think of myself. I don't think of myself as a conservative. I certainly don't think of myself as a journalist. We're radical restorationists. I call this the peaceful revolution. You know, we're using computers and media to restore our country back to our founding principles. That's the whole point of having we the people write the laws we consent to be governed by. That's the purpose of the show. So, in fact, we're doing what he's talking about. I want to get this guy on the show. He's a senior editor at the Federalist.
But I don't know what they mean necessarily by I'm a conservative. I mean, there is no question that parts of the government must intervene to protect the rights of the people. If you had, oh God, there's some really old stupid movie about some small town that was basic where basically the same guy was held every office. You know, if you had an area where there was a team of where there's a group of police, for example, that just went around abusing people and ripping them off and everything like that, the government would have to step in and police the government.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if his argument is that the government has violated its own role, and therefore the government has to restore it. Well, I think that's kind of inherent in the idea of a government. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's a lot deeper than that. This is why I say it's hard to just jump right into this. But let me give you another quote, and then we can go on to a bunch of other issues. He says, put bluntly, if conservatives want to save the country, they're going to have to rebuild and, in a sense, refound it. And that's what we do here, too. He says, and that means getting used to the idea of wielding power and not despising it. So small government doesn't work. We need a big government to basically get our freedom back from the big government. He says, why? He says, because accommodation or compromise with the left is impossible. One need only consider the speed at which the discourse shifted on gay marriage from us. All right, well, I'll skip that part. But he says, you know, but this is it. We have to rebuild and refound our country. We really need to change things. And that's going to require wielding government power. I have no problem with government power as long as it's going in the direction of freedom and not in the direction of tyranny. I just found this a fascinating article. Yeah.
I think that the philosophy is off base.
Okay.
Because I mean, it's sort of like, you know, there is a danger. You know, 1,000 years from now, if people came back and discovered tanks or something like that, and they had no, or even just cars, and they had no idea how to use them, you know, the problem wouldn't be with the equipment. It would be the fact that they don't know how to use what they've got. And I think a lot of the problems we have is that we as citizens, first of all, we don't believe that we have a role as citizens. And then if we actually try to do something that we're supposed to do, we really don't know how to do it. And we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then people, I think, want to radically, radically start over again, without really understanding what they already had, you know. So that's where I would diverge. I mean, first of all, the overwhelming problem is apathy,
right?
And ignorance. So there is no government philosophy or no government system that is ever going to work if the people don't use it and use it properly. So. In fact, let me explain. I don't want to sound like Joe Biden, where I've done a little bit of everything, but I have actually kind of done a little bit of everything, which I chalk up to bad planning and chaos, not you know, not any virtue. But, you know, when I went over to the, well, first of all, I was working in political organizations that were opposed to the Soviet Union and militarism and trying to get freedom. And then when it fell, I felt like, well, I should go over there and actually take a look. So I went over there as a missionary, and we taught business and things like that. And we got a lot of opportunity to talk to the people about their own situation and what was going wrong. And they said that one of the problems after the Soviet Union fell was that they thought communism was when the government took care of you, took care of everything for you, and it didn't work. But capitalism was where the government took care of everything for you, and it did work. You know, they didn't get the they didn't get the concept of, no, you have to do it for yourself. And, you know, that was just not within their lexicon of life. You know, it's their vocabulary of understanding the world. It's like someone talked about how they went as missionaries over to some, well, I won't characterize it, but some developing country. And they were having trouble with food. And as they were walking around, they saw this big, huge field. And they said, why don't you plow up that field and grow some food in it? And the reaction was like, oh, that would be great if someone would come and do that for us.
Yeah.
That was like, no, I think you missed the whole point there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is never going to be any government or philosophy that is going to save us from ourselves, you know, save us from our own. Yeah. I mean, like I say, my experience with my mother and other people and some of the people, even after I finally got involved in politics myself, but I learned from them, have been taking a role for, you know, since the 70s. And there is nothing that's happening right now in our country that they didn't warn about. They warned about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, as I've said before, is that the people just didn't want to listen.
Well,
everybody say, oh, you're just being alarmist. That will never happen. That's, you know, a slippery slope argument. You're being over the top or whatever. And they just didn't want to, you know, they just didn't want to be bothered. So like I say, nothing that is happening to our country now that is a surprise.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
None of this is a surprise.
No, that's the first thing I noticed when I came here. You know, I got here in 1972. I'm 12 years old. And the first thing I noticed was we're at war in Vietnam. And I'm like, where's Vietnam? You know, I mean, I heard a little bit about it in Australia when I was a kid there. But I got here and I'm like, I've studied World War II. I studied in Australia because the Japanese invaded Northern Australia. So a lot of people, this is back in the 60s, so 68, you know, I was there 68 to 72. And in the, you know, in the 60s, there were people still alive who fought World War II. Most of my parents and fathers were in some way involved in World War II. So Australia wasn't that big a country, so they had to defend it. And so World War II was very real for us. And I studied Britain, Battle of Britain, the whole bit, being a Commonwealth country, and then where the Canadians, my own country, you know, originally was involved in. And so war was a very real thing where you got bombed, where there was real evidence of war. And I studied what happened to the Russians, particularly in World War II, which really defines what's happening in Ukraine today. You know, and I looked at this, and I looked at this country at war. I said, where's the war? I don't see it. And if it's not a real war, then why are we fighting it? So to me, my first confusion over the United States was how this country could be at a war that seemed to be fought with money, and people were coming back dead. And I'm like, why? What is going on here? And then I realized that that's how big the federal government was. And then I realized very quickly at the age of 12 that all the things that happened in Germany and Japan and Russia and China and all these communist countries could easily happen here. And I couldn't talk about that with anybody because they all thought it was crazy. So wait a minute, why can't it happen here? Well, because it can't with the United States. So what makes you think you're different? You think the Germans thought that Hitler was going to, you know, instead of nationalizing everything for everybody's benefit and taking care of everybody, just as you said before, You think they thought they were going to end up, you know, in the Holocaust, their nation destroyed, having hyperinflation, you know, where their marks were worth nothing and they had to carry wheelbarrows just to buy a loaf of bread? Do you think that's what they thought back in 1933? Of course not. And they were a civilized, modern, Western, industrial, Christian nation. And look what happened. So it right. never occurred to people to think, and because I thought, you know, because in my experience, and a lot of things that happened to me at a very young age that were rather traumatic, so I realized very quickly that if it could happen, it could happen to me. It didn't matter where I was, whether I was in Canada, Australia, the United States. Things happen. And as an individual, you only have so much control. So it was not shocking.
That is true. I mean, we must take responsibility, and yet we are part of a huge pool that we have only limited influence over. You know, that is part of the dilemma, is that we cannot alone decide what, you know, what happens, even though if we, you know, if we leave it to others, we know it won't happen. And so, you know, we've got sort of all the other people doing different things, like dead, you know, like weights around our necks. But anyway.
Yeah.
So
one more point. I talked about this in the first hour, that as far as change goes, the conservatives and the Republicans, they don't want change. They're comfortable being losers. And I was thinking, you know, and I'm still asking the same question, why hasn't, you know, conservative world and Republican world embrace what we're doing? We're doing everything that they talk about that the founders did. We, the people, are writing laws that we consent to be governed by. We're writing good laws that are simple, easy to understand, that would bring freedom to millions of people, not only here, but worldwide if these bills are shared. You know, you look at our Australian Bill of Rights, you look at our constitutional amendment, take away the power of Congress to borrow money. That would bring about unparalleled prosperity for everybody. And yet, lots of folks know about it. I've talked to Peter Navarro on the show. I've talked to Christina Bob. I've talked to major Trump officials. You know, I've talked to Matt Gaetz at the rally. You know, I saw him in person, handed in the bill. And yet they don't, you know, it's like we give them the answer. You know, you can lead them to water, but you can't make them drink. You know, and they don't see, don't want to see, or they're still comfortable being losers. And I don't understand that. I don't want to be a loser. I want to be a winner.
A couple of things. I mean, Ken Cuccinelli, he was a state senator before he became attorney general of Virginia. And then he became a DHS official dealing with immigration. Now he's a flack for Ron DeSantis. Generally speaking, the Virginia Republican Party is the party of Rockefeller and always has been. So anyway, but so the thing is that what he said after I was out on a day of campaigning with him door to door is that this is when he's running for reelection. He said, we only, you know, I can only take on about three bills per session, which means per year. Because what ends up happening is I have to do it all myself. And I don't have, you know, the manpower to get a bill passed. That I can just throw a bunch of bills in the hopper and ignore them and they won't go anywhere. But if outside people were pushing for something, I would support it. But realistically, if nobody's going to support it, I'm not going to waste my time on more than about three bills per year that I can actually, you know, shove through the system.
That makes sense.
But
I'm not expecting him to support them. I'm expecting we the people to support them. And this is why I sort of envisioned that radio hosts across the country, I would think, would embrace what we're doing, take their audience, pick one or two bills that they really support, advocate those, and you get enough people doing that and sending the bills in. I want a consensus before the bills get to Congress. This is why people, when they say, well, you got any bills passed? I said, not yet, but that's not how this works. We have to build a consensus with the people. We have to build our advocacy, and then through media, and then through pollsters, and then it goes to Congress when it's already pre-approved. That's when you get it through Congress. You don't start with Congress.
Right.
No, with our bills, because we can't buy them like the special interest can, like Big Pharma. big tech. They buy their legislation. We can't afford to do that. We've only got votes, but votes are still more powerful, assuming a fair election. And that kind of power is what we need to use. It's like, remember the Disinformation Bureau? Yeah, they may have changed the name and, you know, moved it. But basically that action moved them because of public pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so public pressure works if you get enough of it.
Well, like I say, the most conservatives, like most people, are perfectly content to sit back and say, you know, say, gee, I wish that would be great if somebody would do that for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
And then even if they now I think things, you know, what has happened from the, you know, starting with Ronald Reagan and Ross Perot's movement and what was the other one? And then there was the Tea Party, and now there's MAGA, is that especially as we're seeing, you know, it's becoming undeniable that government doesn't work and government is our enemy. You know, people's tolerance for the status quo is changing. But that is necessary. And of course, the permanent, you can see like with January 6th, and again, if anybody doesn't know by now, there were an estimated 10,000 demonstrators just at the Capitol, much less 500,000 in the city. And, you know, anybody with a brain knows that 10,000 people did not all do the same thing. The vast majority of those people were simply there to hold a sign, to stand outside, to ask, to petition the government. So when we talk about January 6th, if there were a few people who acted inappropriately or, you know, violently, that's a tiny, tiny, tiny minority of the people.
Yeah, but
we've
got to find out who those people are. I mean, those people most likely are Antifa, Black Lives Matter, or FBI contractors in some way. They call them informants or, you know.
I mean, nobody has fought harder for that than attorney Brad Guyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, been advising him a lot. We're kind of like buddy cops as lawyers. And the courts and the government act like, you know, he's a vampire if he comes within a million miles of that topic. they will scream up and down and go berserk just because he might head, you know, somewhere in that direction.
Well, what are they afraid of?
I think that would be a pregnant question.
Okay.
You know, why are they so afraid of anybody at, you know, looking underneath the hood or pulling back the curtain in Wizard of Oz terms?
Yeah.
You know, why are they so hysterically frantic about this topic?
Well, it proves they're lying. You know, I mean, the fact that they're so, you know, what was Shakespeare said, "Methinks thou protesteth too much." You know, it's like they're actually drawing attention to themselves by being so against it. You know, it's like whenever you know something can't be talked about, that's what you want to talk about. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
When we know they don't want to discuss. Go ahead.
I think Shakespeare was talking about, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not a student, but nothing more than a lady's, you know, expressing a lack of interest in a particular man, or maybe it was even about sex, you know, something
that's
fairly mild. Yeah. But when you talk about the principle of protesting too much, uh-huh. January 6th is, you know, is 1,000 times more. It's like it's off the charts.
Yeah.
In term, you know, compared to what Shakespeare was originally talking about.
I know, but it's applicable. But, I mean, I do that all the time. I'll expand laws like Title 18, Section 242, was really talking about Matthew Shepard and denying of civil rights to a gay guy who was also a drug dealer, who was killed by a couple of other drug dealers. you know, and they said that to anybody who stops the exercise or enjoyment of a civil right, you know, is now guilty of a felony and gets jail and fines. Well, I don't care what the reason was. The fact that the law exists means that we could take Congress, we could take anybody that that suppresses our freedom and stops the exercise or enjoyment, which is the key word, enjoyment of our constitutional rights, and throw their asses in jail. That's what the law says. So we don't have to go by what the intent, you know, or what the subject matter was. That doesn't matter. What matters is what the law says.
Yeah, but the courts will find an excuse to get out of it. But the thing is that so you know what I'm saying is yes and then some. So the thing is that as the American people have tried to get involved, the system has reacted in horror and and violent I don't know what to say, but they have tried, you know, they have tried to put everything back in the, you know, they've tried to scare the American people back into timid compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, it's a, you know, so the thing is that the uprising is happening, but the difference is that it's not working. Their attempt to cow the American people back into silence is just not working, and it's not going to work. And you know, most revolutions and things like that are artificially created. This one is real,
mm-hmm.
But they're doing everything wrong from history to everything. I mean, part of the idea of change,
mm-hmm.
is to expose the oppressors for who they really are. And so every massacre or outrage by a government is actually just, you know, actually just cost them support, legitimacy and support.
Well, look at Waco. Waco caused the militia movement to explode because we didn't want to have our communities destroyed by a government, by Bill Clinton, bringing in the ATF, FBI. I was talking earlier about that if I were governor of Texas, I would have taken the Texas National Guard and surrounded the FBI, ATF, and said, lay down your arms, get the hell out of here, and we're going to settle this peacefully, and stop your stupid siege. Get rid of your tanks and your poison gas. You're not going to kill these people. But that's what I would have done.
I think it starts out that, you know, the Republican Party has been timid. I mean, it's like, it's all, I'm not a great student of the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
But the dominance of the FDR movement and the desperation of the Great Depression and all these things,
mm-hmm.
you know, somehow made the Republican Party, and I mean, even today, okay, in Virginia, you know, Glenn Youngkin is fantasized about as an alternative to Trump, if Ron DeSantis doesn't make it. And these people that I talked to, like Barbara Comstock, was a Republican leader, and they are just passionately committed to their philosophy of doing, you know, as little as possible. And the thing is, they really, you know, for example, they say, they assume that if they say things like, aren't you tired of the chaos, you know, and you just want, it's like,
is the operation, is the whole point. Exactly. I mean, we need the chaos, but
because
it's not
the chaos.
It's restructuring.
Because the chaos is the change. They somehow think they're going to win a battle without ever fighting.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it's not exactly chaos.
Yeah.
But anyway, and you know, so the American people, they want change as long as they can still, and I'm going to say it.
As long as nothing changes.
as long as they don't have to do it. Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I think that it is true that, I'm sorry to say, you know, because people aren't, well, I mean, if you touch the idol, you know, if you touch the golden, you know, the golden calf, or you won't bow down when they blow the trumpet. So I'm going to touch the third rail, or the golden idol, sports. A country that is this obsessed. I don't mean, you know, sometimes, you know, my dad would work hard and come home and put on the game, and then he'd promptly fall asleep. But I mean the obsession.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the obsession. Mm-hmm. It is pervert. It is idolatry. It is worse than any poison that's ever been in our society, is what sports has done to our voting population.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Well,
and
it's,
you know.
No, I think you're honest, because it's a way to feel good without actually having to work. In other words, you can feel as good as an athlete without actually having to be an athlete and doing the training and having the diet and doing the exercise in the gym and the practice of the skills. It's a way for people to feel good who aren't actually doing the work. They're not in the arena, as Teddy Roosevelt said. They're just watching. They're like the people watching a gladiator event saying, you know, aren't I brave? I'm here at a gladiator event. I have all the adrenaline they have. I'm as good as they are. No, you're not. Because you're not in the ring. You know, and so it's a way to feel good about yourself for not being there in the sports arena, which is a problem. The same thing with politics.
And how pathetic to live one's life and never experience that for real.
Yeah.
Only
we don't have that problem here. We're right in the arena. Yeah.
Yeah, the synthetic drug.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. All right, yeah. So.
What do you want
to
talk about?
Great intro. A lot of tempting things. Of course, we had, my interpretation is we had Kabuki theater over the, I don't even know what Kabuki is, but the phrase works.
Live anime. You know, anime cartoons is like live anime. People get dressed up in caricatures.
Yeah. So basically, you know, in brief, my interpretation of the, and like I say, I don't want people to ever get into the mode, and I have to check myself, that we, here, Gateway Pundit, Larry Johnson, who's a constant thing. I mean, so the thing is like I was talking to my friend with a Russian background, who knows all about these things, and so I was getting some feedback in here, and again, it's just, think about this in terms of what the established system is trying to do to prevent change. Go back to sleep, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. And I don't mean that every crazy idea that pops into your head is necessarily true or worth
it's
following.
It's not? Oh, no.
But neither should we, you know, neither should we think that what the media is telling us. I mean, basically, most of the media, most of the journalists, what they're telling us is happening, they don't even know. You know, yes, they lie. Yes, they're dishonest. But the idea that the media even knows is laughable. You know, all they know is what they're handed to read. And so I was telling my friend, you know, that, look, I'm not responsible for Ukraine. I'm not responsible for Russia. I am responsible for my own country, which is going around stirring up wars and getting people killed all around the world.
Oh, I got a question on that. because I was thinking of a model last night for how this works, the neocons. I was reading an article that Biden is sending billions of dollars. Nobody's talking about this, but except Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch, who has been on the show, and was talking about the billions that are still going to Afghanistan. I thought, why would billions be going to Afghanistan? Well, to rebuild the country. So the model is, there's two models.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is it's on my Facebook. It's in the international news section. And so what I'm thinking is that the same people, the Black Rocks, you know, the ones where war is good for business, what they do, the neocons have a double approach to this. So they always win. It's like making money when the market goes up and making money when the market goes down. Either way, they make money. Same thing with war. They make money causing a war, fighting a war, supplying the military munitions to fight the war, and then when the country's destroyed, they make money on the loans to build the country back up again, which means they can then go to war again. So it's like a perpetual cycle. In the same way, vaccines, yep, which are not vaccines, destroy your immune system so they can sell more vaccines because people are dying of a disease. Well, you didn't have enough vaccine. That's your problem. You need four more boosters. Well, if the first shot worked and your body learned about the virus, you wouldn't need any more shots. So this is a marketing scheme. It's like, why do you, you know, I use the example of popcorn. You know, why do you buy a drink after you eat popcorn? Well, because it's full of salt. So you drink a soda. Well, what's in the soda? More salt, which makes you thirsty, which makes you buy more soda. So these are self-perpetuating marketing schemes. So war is a self-perpetuating marketing scheme where the military-industrial complex starts a war in a country like Ukraine, funds the war, and now they're going to fund the rebuilding of it once the war is over, whenever that's over. We'll probably refund it in Russia too. What do you think?
Now, there are armies. Now, basically, these people, most of whom are Obama's foreign policy team, mm-hmm, you know, in whatever agency they were in, they should all be pursuant to law. You know, people will say, oh, you're promoting violence or something. No, I'm talking about the Nuremberg trials, convened properly according to the law, run by the law, and a legal outcome. But basically, the only outcome I can see for these people like Victoria Nuland and Alexander Vindman is that they should be lined up against the wall and shot by a duly appointed,
Well, I'm just thinking of the violence aspect. I'm thinking of, you know, there's very few things that will get us taken off the air. One of them is advocating violence. And if you're doing it, couch it in the, let's do this one more time. Just make sure everybody understands what we're talking about here. We're talking about duly constituted due process, Nuremberg-type trials for war criminals. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's do that again.
The Obama's foreign policy team, if we applied the same standard as the Nuremberg trials, they would all have to stand trial for crimes against the country. Remember the Logan Act? You know, they're creating their own foreign policy. And they have gotten, I mean, nobody has gotten more Ukrainians killed than Victoria Nuland and Alexander Vindman in the name of promoting Ukraine.
He's Ukrainian. He was born there. So he's a traitor to his country and a traitor to our country at the same time, which is interesting.
And remember, during the impeachment hearings, these guys, they when allowed to go on too long, they should have been cut off. I mean, a good trial advocate would have cut them off sooner. They went on and said that the problem is that, you know, Donald Trump would not follow the foreign policy of the well-established foreign policy of the United States.
That they recommended.
And if you listen, right. If you listen to them.
Yep.
Well, what it means is that that the bureaucracy decides the foreign policy.
Yeah.
Not the president.
Yeah, and their counterparts. They value their counterparts. It's like Milley values his counterpart in China more than he valued Donald Trump. These people talked about their counterparts in Ukraine and Russia, and they said, "Well, we've already decided this. We've already established a foreign policy. Trump's just getting in the way of our foreign policy." That's effectively what they said.
I lost my phone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I heard you drop it too.
I dropped my phone. So anyway,
wow, must have made a good point.
But yeah, that was the thing. So so anyway, we held Nuremberg, but my point is that what he is describing is an admitted violation of the Logan Act, which remember they went after General Michael Flynn for violating the Logan Act, which means, you know, conducting your own foreign policy.
Right. Like John Kerry does.
Yeah. So they admitted to violating the law, as in addition to getting lots of people killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm talking about, is that they should be put on trial.
Yeah, I see the whole deep state. Would you include Obama in that? I mean, let's go for the. I'm now calling this regime the Obama dictatorship. This is a dictatorship of Obama, and something really interesting has happened. A couple of things I want to talk to you about real quick. But would you include Obama in the war crimes trial?
Well, yeah, I mean, he there's a point at which things are true, but the people doing them are too slippery to get caught.
Okay.
So to the extent that they can't hide what their, you know, the reality is, yes, but there is a point at which, you know, the real kingpins, you know, make sure they can't be caught. But anyway, so let me go. So it's now 20 minutes. So I guess I'll skip the rest of. I mean, my view of Russia is. The Gateway Pundit by Larry Johnson has an article up today. Did you know Vladimir Putin is a ruthless killer of his political foes, except Prigozhin? Why is that? You know, he is, you know, Prigozhin is the head of the Wagner Group.
I want to talk about that because you've got expertise in this area. I don't care about the Hunter issues or some of the Biden issues and things like that. I really want to understand because I don't know as much about what's going on in Russia right now. So let's talk about the Wagner Group and how this militant – mercenary
we can do,
group. Go ahead.
Yeah, we could do Hunter next
yeah,
week, perhaps.
That's not going to go away. This is more immediate because this is more World War III potential huge disaster.
Here's my conclusion, and I want people to understand. You know, people will say, "Well, where's your evidence of that?" Okay, my argument is that this is the only model that fits the known data. It's like a true model is not a global climate change model. Those are not models. They're BS.
There's
but an actual scientific model is you take what you know and you try to explain, you know, it's like all this massive data best fits a line.
Right.
You know, and so the data that we know shows that Putin and Prigozhin, the head of the Wagner Group, together put on this play. Over the last 48 hours.
Interesting. Tell me.
Because this was, you know, and people are saying this is a loss for Putin. No. There's going to be a chaotic period and he's going to have to play it right. And I've been wrong before about Putin doing dumb things. Mm-hmm. He never should have invaded Ukraine. And I argue that he wasn't going to because it would be stupid, and then he did it, and it was still stupid, but he did it.
I said the same about Ron DeSantis running for president, but they did it anyway.
Exactly.
They don't listen to us.
But I can still say, I mean, it was still stupid. You know,
right.
the fact that Putin did it didn't change it from being stupid, as well as horrible in every other way.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that, Prigozhin is too smart, too experienced, and too valuable to just be saying, I mean, yes, he could be insane. He could have gotten syphilis.
Where does he come from? Who is he? Who is this guy? Where does he come from? What is the Wagner Group or the Wagner Group, if you want to be German?
It's like not Black Rock, but we had a version of that. In Iraq,
what was that group in the security forces? It was Black something. Who was that group? They were in Afghanistan and Iraq. Blackwater?
Blackwater, right.
Okay,
it's a private group where people can hire soldiers. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly used for...
mercenaries, right?
Shaky governments, let me put it this way. Shaky countries.
To do things governments want done but can't do themselves. Is that a good definition?
Right. Right.
Okay.
So the theory is that one of the reasons why Russia has leaned so heavily on the Wagner Group is precisely that, is so that if they do something, they can come back and say, hey, it wasn't us.
Plausible deniability, right?
Right,
okay.
Which, of course, nobody believes. No, but the Wagner Group apparently is in nine other countries. They're uh-huh. actually being hired by nine other countries, but mainly Russia in this war. And the thing is that the Wagner Group has both emptied out the prisons with promises of leniency, but also contains some of the most experienced military veterans they can find in the world. There's two groups. Yes, they've got cannon fodder of convicts, just as waves of, you know, whatever. But they've also got very experienced military veterans. So Prigozhin has been bellyaching for a year that he's not getting support from Shoigu, the defense minister, and the Russian military bureaucracy. Now, the Russian military bureaucracy, the generals, they have reportedly, embezzled Russian military funds, and they're all oligarchs. and they're not so. I mean, the bottom line is, with time short here, is that it's a lot like comparisons get people all goofed up. But the thing is, it's like, you know, there's a situation that happens where someone is nominally in charge, mm-hmm. but it's like being the captain of the ship and you give orders and nobody listens. So Putin has been trying to fight this war, which, again, he shouldn't have fought.
Right.
And yes, Putin is an evil guy who would slit his grandmother's throat without thinking, you know, without hesitation. But
well,
I'm
well,
just
so
analyzing.
Is most of our government. Yeah, I mean, it's not that we're angels.
Yeah, I know. But
he's no worse than Obama or Clinton. Clinton massacred our own people. You know, so, I mean, there's not that much difference. He's very much like Clinton, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
and Obama.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, the thing is, he has been trying to fight this war with a Russian military bureaucracy that is non-responsive.
Mm.
They don't. They're fat, lazy, happy. They're independently wealthy because they've stolen all this money from the military budget. they don't want to do what they don't want to do, and so. And that does not mean they're, you know, like I say, everybody thinks, well, if we get rid of Putin, we'll have peace. No, you'll get someone worse. You know, if we got rid of Putin, as bad as he is,
mm-hmm.
the people behind him, you know, are going to turn Ukraine into a parking lot, and they're going to break out the nukes, you know, like bottles of champagne on New Year's
Eve.
Oh,
they're in Belarus, right? And by the way, Belarus
right.
listens to us. So I'd love to have a call
That's
from Belarus.
That's the thing. So here, the Wagner Group is rolling. They roll into Rostov, which is a Rostov on Don, Don being a river,
mm-hmm.
and they take over this Russian town. They're no longer in Ukraine, and the people love them. You know, the Russian people are like, "Yay!" I mean, it's a big party.
Oh yeah,
you know,
well,
and
they're Russian.
Well, yeah. Well, yes. But the thing is, they're not like, oh, my God, you guys are having a coup. And you know, they're like, you know, finally someone with a back. I mean, you have to understand Russians. You know, they would blow themselves up just for the joy of seeing Europe burn. I mean, they are Klingon. They are not like latte drinking Starbucks customers in Manhattan.
Wow.
They are not. They do not think like they are Klingons. And you know, today is a good day.
Were they
to
modeled
die.
After the, were the Klingons modeled after the Russian communist government? Sounds like
I think it has to be at least unconsciously.
Okay, maybe consciously.
If anybody knows Russians, it's like you say, well, if you use nuclear weapons, you might get hit back. And the Russians are like, yeah, so.
So exactly,
I mean,
they don't care.
Yeah, is my life that great to begin with?
Yeah, they're all
like,
drunk
so,
and they're
yeah.
all dead at 55 from alcoholism.
I mean, as long
most
as,
of the Russian men,
if,
you know.
If I hit New York,
right,
and I get to watch New York blow up 5 minutes before I get blown up, that's a great 5 minutes. Now, nobody in Hollywood or Manhattan or, you know, any of these things can comprehend that.
Right.
Because other countries are not like us. Mm-hmm. They assume that everybody's like us. So anyway, the Wagner Group is rolling up the highway, and there's nobody there to stop them. Now, remember, you got a military bureaucracy, mm-hmm. and you say, well, Putin's a dictator. But he depends upon the Russian military leadership, and they're not doing what he wants. So Putin has nobody to enforce his dictatorial agenda.
Right.
Because all the people so now suddenly 25,000 killers on tanks are rolling up the highway and nobody's stopping them.
Who are these people working on? They're hired by Russia to go after to fight the war in Ukraine? I mean, who are they?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're independent contractors.
Okay.
And Prigozhin has been criticizing the Russian military leadership the whole time that they are not doing it. So the thing is he's complaining that we would be winning this war in Ukraine except these dumb bureaucrats. And so now they've got this force rolling up the highway like it's a family vacation, just heading right for Moscow.
And there's no Ukraine opposition. Oh, they're going to Moscow. I thought you said they were going into Ukraine.
Well, they are. Yeah, but they went into Rostov, which is Russia, and they're rolling up the highway to Moscow.
Why? Why are they going to Moscow?
To shoot the generals.
Putin. Wait a minute. Putin hired these guys to attack his own generals?
No. Yes, the generals are the problem from Putin's perspective. The generals won't do what Putin wants him to do.
So he wants to get rid of the generals.
And they're like, what are you going to do about it? Yes, you're a dictator, but you depend upon us to keep you in power. Oh, really? I'm going to send 25,000 Wagner Group people on tanks. Well, nobody's saying this.
Right.
You know, they're rolling up the highway.
Right. So the people don't care because they're either under generals' dictatorship or Putin's dictatorship.
Well, but the thing is that everybody says that, you know, Putin is weakened. No, Putin now has a choke chain around all the generals, around their necks. You know, now if any of those generals don't do what Putin wants, he could say, well, let's pick up the phone and call Prigozhin again.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to, I mean, because what they saw was an army rolling up the highway with nothing to stop them. And Prigozhin has made no secret of the fact that they are the enemy. Now, he said some unpleasant things about Putin, and, you know, and he's criticized Putin to some extent, but I consider that to be part of the Kabuki theater. Okay. That's the community theater. And really, when you look at it this way, it's not especially good theater, but it's like so it's this pretend spat between Putin and Prigozhin, and they're, you know, but the main target are all these fat, lazy, corrupt generals who've stolen all the money and have money in banks in Malta and Cyprus and everything like that, and they're seeing this army coming up the highway to kill them. And now suddenly it doesn't look so. Now Putin doesn't look so weak. Now it's like, you know, maybe we shouldn't be dragging our feet on supplying the troops in Ukraine. Maybe we shouldn't be, you know, defying Putin, because from their perspective, it's like Putin is just one guy, two arms and two legs, and it's like without us, the Russian military, who is he? It's like, oh, I'll show you who I am. There's an army coming up the highway with no one to stop them.
Uh-huh.
None of the military is intervening. You know, the actual rank and file, they're like cheering them on. And they're coming up there, and they're going to be firing squads in Moscow. And then suddenly, 100 miles short of Moscow, Prigozhin stops And he turns around and he goes back. That happened on Saturday. So this army of 25,000 on tanks, some of the best fighters in the world, because they're veterans.
Races into Russia, then turns around and heads back again. All right, now, so Mark has a little different take on. Oh, that's fascinating. So Mark has a little different take on this. He's saying that Prigozhin was actually bought by the West. In other words, you know, the Obama dictatorship. He says
Some people are saying these are not mutually exclusive. Putin and Prigozhin just suckered the CIA out of $6 billion.
Okay.
So yes, the CIA paid Prigozhin off. I mean, look, first of all, we have to, in trying to understand Russia, because Americans are terrible at thinking the rest of the world is just like us. Churchill said 100 years ago that Russia is, what is it, a mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a riddle.
Right.
And if a student of history like him emphasizes the fact that we don't understand what's going on behind the scenes.
Uh-huh.
What makes everybody think that, I mean, the idea of taking $6 billion or whatever it might be from the CIA and then turning around and stabbing them in the back, it's like the Russians invented it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, so flip-flops and, you know, and double crosses and triple crosses and things like that. That's, that's all Russian. That's just normal. That's just politics in Russia. And so I do think that's likely, is that, so he stops and he goes back and the deal is all charges dropped for this insurrection.
Right.
And he's going to go to Belarus, which, by the way, is right near Kiev.
Yeah, which is
so the
Ukraine capital.
The head of the Wagner Group is now going to go into exile into Belarus, whose leader, Lukashenko, you know, is basically Joseph Stalin. I mean, there is no other country on earth right now.
Right.
Huh?
And a Russian puppet. He works with Putin, right? He's like Belarus and Russia. They're buds. Okay.
They're buddies. So the most Stalinesque leader in the world, other than, you know, perhaps Putin and some of the people there themselves, are just across the border from Kiev.
In Belarus.
And the Wagner Group is going to go out there into exile, all charges dropped, and sit across the border from Kiev in the Ukraine, obviously. So what the hell is that?
Well,
I mean, all that happened is the Wagner Group just moved over to, in addition to scaring the pants off all the generals, you know, they're poised to invade Kiev.
Huh.
Everyone in the West is like, so, you know, they thought, I mean, again, but everybody in the West thinks that this is the downfall of Putin. You guys, don't you understand that if Putin were removed, whomever would take his place would be worse?
Well, yeah, that's
now,
what
that's
I'm thinking,
not
too.
That's
I mean, Putin's not the problem. It's who would replace him. Well, Marco has a take on this, too, from the Netherlands. He says Prigozhin is going to Belarus, just as you said, not going to lead Wagner anymore. Only Wagner soldiers, old Wagner soldiers, can now get a new contract with the Russian army. So this is fascinating. New York Post has exactly what you talked about. The big article, which I posted earlier from this weekend, this guy Douglas Murray says Putin's on his way out, but things could go from Vlad to worse. You know, so he thinks he's being clever. Vlad to worse, right? Yeah, exactly. He says
that doesn't mean you don't fight evil because somebody worse may come along. You just have to, like, pay attention to what you're doing. The fact that there are worse people than Putin doesn't mean that we should just give Putin everything he wants. But it just means
true.
You should, like, you shouldn't drive down the highways with your eyes closed. but the Western media, they were all excited. This is the beginning of the end for Putin. I mean, they've always tried to they always try to personalize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I mean, the Russian
gotta
people,
boogeyman.
By and large.
Got to have a boogeyman.
Yeah.
Got to hate somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And my friend who's over this, she knows, like, you've heard of the people that refuse to sign up, that are trying to flee the draft. And that's real, I'm sure,
in
Russia. But she says everybody she knows over there, thousands of them, have all volunteered in Russia. And the thing is that they, I mean, and the thing that she focused on most was Lindsey Graham saying this money was a good investment killing Russians. Now, all Putin has to do is play that over and over. He's a senator. He's a U.S. freaking senator, mm-hmm. saying that killing Russians is a good investment of U.S. money.
Oh, he's the ultimate neocon. I mean, I say the neocons, they destroy countries with war, and then they get the contracts to rebuild them. And either way, they make money on both ends. They make money on the destruction. They make money on the rebuilding. That's what's going on here.
Right.
This is the new war. This is the new Afghanistan, which is the new Iraq, which was the new, you know, Bosnia-Herzegovina, which was the new, you know, Vietnam, which is the new Korea. It's all the same thing. It's all the same plan.
Well, this is what I said earlier about I am responsible for my country. What country are they going to do this to next? I am responsible for that.
Sudan.
I'm not responsible for
what? Sudan. They're already paving the way for Sudan.
Are they?
They tried to do it in Syria with Benghazi, which was an arms running place. That's what Chris Stevens was doing there. He was running guns to ISIS so they could overthrow Assad in Syria. That's the untold part of this thing. This is fascinating. Mm-hmm. We got I got Dorothy on the line, so we're going to end up here in a minute. But we got to follow this through. Check out the New York Times article. I post the conservative article on your page, so you can take a look at that. But I've got there's so much happening right now. This is fascinating, and just watching the players play, it's like you know, all these government people. And something we have to talk about is the fact that I think Obama has told the mainstream press to go after Biden because they're now starting to ask real questions about. I think Biden's become more liability than he has been advantage.
Yeah,
he served his purpose, and Obama's given the order to the mainstream press. It's now okay to criticize Biden publicly and start asking questions because they all start asking at the same time, which means they're all under orders. It's fascinating. Yeah, more to talk about. I'll send you stuff. Check out I have multiple Facebook pages on all this stuff. It's been quite a weekend. All right, thank you, Jonathan. Let's do it again next week. Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Take care now. Oh boy. This has been a fascinating couple of hours. And now, as we do on Mondays, we totally change to something completely different. So we go from politics. Well, actually, it's not that politics and sex aren't that different. They are here, but not as a general rule. So let's get on to I'm just doing quick scrolling here. Let me find my theme. And where did I put your theme, Dorothy? Ah, here it is. There we go. Sex. Everybody talks about it. Some of you are even doing it. But are you really talking to the person you are doing it with? It all comes down to communication. That's where Dorothy Diana comes in. Dorothy is a sexual health nurse educator. She has studied hypnotherapy, Reiki, and many other disciplines. And what is sex without sensuality? Something has to light your afterburner. Join us now for a sometimes very frank and occasionally quite descriptive conversation of sex and sensuality with Dorothy Diana. Hey, gorgeous. How you doing this week? Totally.
I'm doing great. I listened to the last part of the previous hour. It's definitely very different than what I'm here to talk about. Very interesting.
I
just
like having you on, though.
It's
such a nice contrast. I mean, I have the first hour myself to rant, which I did. I ranted unbelievably the first hour. Jonathan and I really get to hash over the issues in the second hour, and then it completely changed and talk to you about really cool stuff. So it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice change. Keeps me flexible mentally. Yeah.
So, you know, I had a hard time choosing a topic this week, honestly. There was a few things that came up for me in my conversations and my experiences teaching and just going through life. And one that decided to stick with me this morning was, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, of course, because this came up politically pretty hot and heavy the past couple of years, this changing definition of female and woman in Merriam-Webster and how controversial that was and who said what and how politicized it became. You know, this politician was asked, what is a woman? And she couldn't even answer. Remember
that's
that?
Happened a few times. That deserves analysis itself. You know, is it, why is that suddenly a problem? What kind of political agenda has turned these people into mental idiots? Because we all know the difference between men and women.
We
know physically, we know mentally, Right.
I don't know if they're idiots. I think it is worth a discussion.
No, they're not idiots. It's ideology.
Yeah.
Their ideology is getting in the way. They're not idiots. These are not stupid people. So this is an intentional distortion of reality because we know men and women are different. We know boys and girls are different. We know we're different physically. We know we're different mentally. We're different emotionally. We're different in the way our brains are wired. We are completely different. We are the yin and yang that makes the human species.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also a diverse spectrum in the middle that exists biologically, that's factual, and that's increased over the last 20 years significantly. And there are different strong hypotheses as to why, but
I'll
denying
challenge
that,
you on
there's,
that.
A, you know, there's a denying. Well, there's I know. Well, okay. So
another time. Yeah.
There is a spectrum in between and all around biological male and female, and that spectrum can define and form how someone presents in the world, their gender identity. So that's real also. And what I find interesting
is it their gender identity or their identity? See, to me, well, first of all, gender doesn't apply. Gender is a term for languages like, you know, French, la table, table's female. Why is the table female? I have no idea. Why is el lobo in Spanish, the wolf? Why is that masculine? That's how those languages work. Mm-hmm. That's what gender is, as I understand it. But sex is different. If you're talking about male versus female, XX versus XY chromosomes, that's biology. Mm-hmm. Now, is it gender identity or identity? I think, you know, because there are feminine guys, there are metrosexual guys, there are masculine guys, there are macho guys, there are sadomasochistic crazy guys. There's same thing with women. You've got more masculine women, you've got more feminine women, you know, you've got everything in between. But that's not a gender identity or a sex identity, that's just simply an identity. And I think if we look at it that way, we can understand it better. So in other words, we don't have to change genders, we don't have to change definitions of sex simply because people are different. People are different because people are different. And that makes much more sense to me as a way to identify this. So you can identify however you want, you're not changing your gender and you're certainly not changing your sex.
Okay,
but you may change your identity.
Gender and sex are not the same, right?
Right.
So gender is the characteristics you display that usually, typically are either male or female, and there's a broad range of those typical characteristics. So not everyone who's born XX naturally, innately displays the desires, tendencies, behaviors, of a typical female sex. And so this spectrum,
but that's an identity.
That's
an identity. That's
this,
not a
gender. Right. This is a
gender
identity. Gender
is still
identity,
language.
So
but gender only applies to language. You know, the female table, the male wolf, you know, el lobo, you know, la table. That's gender. That's all it ever was. This, where people confuse gender and sex. Sex is what you are biologically.
Gender is the trait typically associated with one.
Okay,
we're
contradicting each other, which is interesting. Let me look it up. Let's see what our online dictionary says about gender. This is kind of I'm disagreeing, but I'm not, you know, trying to be offensive and discounting what you're saying.
Gender is the range of behaviors and the sex, the traits of the typical sex you identify with is your gender
identity,
which
is
why
years
ago, well, you can disagree, but the rest of the world is moving on.
Well, the rest of the world may be changing, but the rest of the world redefines marriage sort of too, but it doesn't.
Anything. It's not, that is not taking away from anyone, that understanding that there is a spectrum when it comes to both biological sex, there is a spectrum. You don't have to have XX or XY, and that seems to keep increasing the sort of, I don't like the word mutations, but.
Well, it seems kind of fast for evolution, don't you think?
Diversity,
the
biological
diversity
is increasing, period. It
what
is,
are the possibilities?
We can be in denial of that. And so we can talk about the causes, but what I came, which we have before, and it's interesting, but people, humans are still important. So even if we have created an entire epidemic of spectrum, neurological spectrum males because of the PrEP Act and pharmaceutical abuse, we still have, I mean, I feel like it's my responsibility to treat people with compassion while we come up with solutions. So I love A Beautiful Rainbow, and I did prior to it becoming political. And I don't see anything damaging. The damaging is when someone's encouraged to be somebody that they're not, whether that's, you know, I work
or not
with
be
women,
somebody
which,
that they are. It works both ways.
Right. So I work, you know, I work with women that, and I would say I don't think I've ever encountered a woman that felt like she was allowed to truly be herself in her femininity from the time she was
so that's conditioning.
Can remember. And that
yeah, that's parental societal conditioning. Yeah.
And it
right?
didn't have a lot of bodily offenses. So things that sort of mini or large traumas to her body and her sexuality. So this is part of the culture we live in. And now we have many biological males who really identify their gender as very masculine, who don't feel permitted to be who they are and are very confused as to what it means to be a healthy male. Like our culture is very confusing. So I'm always a fan of who you were, how you were truly born when with supportive parents who are open-minded and have great critical thinking. Right. Who are you really? And by the time you come to adulthood, if you were supported in that way, you kind of know it. And if you weren't, you know, it becomes sort of obvious and then you do your healing work. So I guess just saying that we know that the spectrum of people being born that don't fall into the typical XX fully female gender identity and having XX and a brain that works that way, and the other, the XY, and having all typical male characteristics, identifying as male, that is all becoming hugely more common that that's not the case. And so I believe there's a lot of reasons. And then politically, there's an unhealthy push. And when these political figures don't know what a woman is, I think that's very interesting. Like, they can't
do,
answer the question because no one's told. No one really...
Now they want to confuse. They want to confuse people. They want to. So the whole reason for this is to remove any gender or sex identity. It affects to remove any identity. In other words, men can be women, go in women's bathrooms. You know, men can swim on women's swim teams. So there is no difference. So in other words, this is the elimination. The reason that they're saying this is because they want to eliminate the idea that there are two sexes, that we're really uni people. Mm. This is where it comes from. So a couple things I found. One, my online dictionary under gender says the word gender has been used since the 14th century. We're talking the 1300s, folks, as a grammatical term referring to classes of noun designated as masculine, feminine, or neuter in some languages. In other words, just like I said, el lobo, the wolf, is masculine, whereas la table in French is feminine. But tables, well,
right.
wolves may be, you know, male, female, but inanimate objects like tables have a gender in Spanish and French and Italian. The Romance languages.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way those languages are set up. That's gender. Okay, gender is not your sex. Now, your sex, as
but
I see it, is your...
No,
well,
gender
hold on.
Sex, but it's your presentation. It's your identity.
But that's
it's
only
how
a
you
new,
move through the world.
That's only a new interpretation. It wasn't that way. You know, and this is like the words are changing now. People are changing words around.
I
equity
know. What about Virginia
money.
Woolf?
Mm-hmm. What about Virginia
it's
Woolf?
It's been around a long time. So people who came into the world in one category of sex, but didn't identify that way and live their life in a fully different is not new at all. But I think
no, I'm not saying you have to do that, but
to describe it. Yeah.
Well, let's talk. All right. There's two different things going on. See, the way I see it, your biological sex is immutable. That's what you're born with. You're born male, you're born female. Actually, it's probably decided at conception. You know, when the sperm and egg do their thing, right? And you get your XX or XY chromosomes. Now, does that limit your range of personality or who you are in any way? No, it doesn't. It only determines your biological sex. Now, your identity, not your gender identity, not your sex identity, but simply your identity is as complicated as every person on the face of the earth because we're all unique. Therefore, we're all going to have a unique amount of male and female, even though we're men and women. That's okay. But to say that this is sex-related or gender-related, I think, is inaccurate. And it takes away from the individuality here and confuses it because, and this is how we get into trans stuff and all the other things that are happening now, and the idea of saying that they don't know what a woman is because I'm not a biologist. Well, I'm not a meteorologist, but I know when it's raining, you know, I can tell men from women. and how you act in the full spectrum. How?
Mm-hmm.
XX and XY. I mean, there's a biological way to tell men from
women.
But
there are people
now
that aren't XX and XY.
So what are the variations? What have we got?
There are many. There are many. And that's interesting because I was interested that you came across gender only referring to objects prior to recently, but
no, it's a language term. It's a language and literature refers to gender.
It also has throughout the 20th century to describe how you identify the characteristics associated with a certain sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a wrong definition.
And
I'll be blunt.
Back to the 15th
that's a misuse
century
of the word. Yeah, that's a misuse of the word. It's confusing people.
Okay. I mean, we're talking about like people whose, you know, professions and life careers were, you know, examining sexuality and gender.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and I think they're wrong. That's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like people that say, well, you're not an expert. You're not a doctor. How do you have a medical opinions? Well, it's very simple. I can read studies. I have a brain and I use it. And so in that regard, I think that confuses people. But what I'm saying is it's actually freer if you use my definition. What I'm saying is you can be anything you want. You can identify how you want. It doesn't change your biology, but people are confusing biology with your personal identity. And there's two totally different things. I see them as separate. So in other words, you can be as masculine or as feminine as you want. You're still a woman. And that's your biology. But if you separate that, you can dress as a guy or dress as a woman.
Yeah, woman and female are different, which is what I found most interesting. For me, the word woman and female are different. So female is the biological sex, XX. And you can produce eggs and you can bear young.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, I'll be honest, I'm a little uncomfortable with these studies that have started in the early 2000s. They're claiming to have these benefits. Oh, if we do this research, we can put an end to unethical cloning. And what the research is how to grow eggs inside male testes, how to grow eggs in a petri dish and then implant them in males. And I find this very interesting because what they say, and this is, of course, nature. So nature is one of the most bought and sold. This is my strong opinion. Anybody can argue with me if they want, but this has been a long time. I've known this. One of those bought and sold journals, right? Politically motivated, and they'll ignore any study that doesn't support a certain political agenda, and they will never go against pharmaceutical companies. But these are nature studies. So I think that's interesting. But generally, female means, you know, the sex that can bear young, produce eggs, right? And so woman is not the same. The definition of woman is an adult female and someone with a feminine nature.
Those are two different things. A feminine nature. A man can have a feminine nature. It doesn't make him a woman.
It doesn't make him an adult female unless he can produce eggs, right? Or bear young.
Let me ask you a question.
I think that's trying to be changed also, which is interesting.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is a fascinating subject you brought up here. The one thing I do not understand is this idea of male birth. In fact, it's in our comedy thing. You know, this fascination with saying that men, you know, they're putting tampons in men in boys' bathrooms, you know, in high school. That or young men's fat, that's insane. That's irrational. But this merging that's saying that men can bear children and women can whatever, I don't know what it is, you know, probably produce sperm at some point. This is irrational to me because we already have this covered. You know, God and nature already figured this out a long time ago. There are men and women. There are male and female. In fact, unless you get down to the one-celled animals, pretty much everything on Earth, including the plants, by the way, you know, which have both, you know, that's why they need to be fertilized by bees, you know, because their plants are even male and female. But there's a reason that God set up the world with male and female. Biologically, it makes sense.
Well,
it's
yin
the
and
way
yang,
to...
it goes back, it's the ancient history that yin and yang is part of human, part of the biological world, part of the real world, even the spiritual world, is the idea of polar opposites and how they need each other. But what doesn't have that? You know, technology, robotics, AI, total disconnect, total soullessness, if you have a marriage or a relationship without polarity, you usually have no chemistry whatsoever. And with chemistry comes sexual pleasure and sexual realization and joy and enjoying each other's bodies and connection. And you know, I believe that sexuality is very sacred and healthy
super evolved high vibrational sexuality is really mm-hmm. essential for our happiness. And so if you take away polarity, you take away chemistry, and that's just in the sexual term. But what if you take away polarity everywhere else? Also, there feels like there's a push to do this, right? That, mm-hmm. And so I think
well,
this goes way beyond. And we're very we're loving as humans. We're inclusive. And
right.
A healthy human who is intellectually curious and loves themselves has the tendency to want to accept and love others and be curious. So when that stops is when we're told that it's a threat to who we are and to our safety. So when humans are just moving through the world and understanding that there is a diversity and that's normal and healthy and that's not harmful or dangerous based on views on religion or whatever imposed hierarchical structure is telling us it's dangerous to be diverse. It's dangerous to be different.
No, it's not.
It's different and diverse.
But,
it's different and diverse.
Diverse people don't
diverse.
Want diversity.
If different and diverse is loving and,
right.
and helpful and beneficial and non-threatening, if we see it that way, we are very welcoming and curious, right? But what mm-hmm. happens is politics gets involved and makes it two sides, makes us all argue about it, and mm-hmm. And then polarizes by saying that, you know, if you don't immediately believe in everything the political agenda says, you're a bigot, you're hateful, you're closed-minded, you're ignorant.
Well, that's just a political weapon. That's like accusing people of racism.
If you don't ask everyone their pronouns, if you don't
right.
immediately say your pronouns, if you don't encourage your children, like I did when my son was young, to push a stroller, wear a tutu, and look at construction, I thought that I would live in Santa Monica.
Why did you do that?
And I put all those things in front.
Why did you put your son in a tutu?
Because you don't encourage them. You don't put them in a tutu. You put some people might. I didn't. But what my friends and I did, and we're all very educated and very open-minded and progressive, is we put all the items available. And you never say, no, don't do that. That's for a boy. And it's interesting.
I never did that.
Is they might choose a tutu for about 5 minutes, but then they really lean more towards what their natural gender identity is. Now, I will say my sons were very low vaccinated, which vaccines seem to be highly correlated with gender confusion. That's just a fact.
Oh, Stop right there. This is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again. Vaccines.
And I didn't want to get
okay.
into that because we've talked about that. Not just
okay,
vaccines,
just
but, you know, obviously
write a note
plastic,
for another show.
Estrogen.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a correlation that the mainstream attempts to keep pushing down, suppressing, and ignoring, but this very strong correlation the correlation is me being very kind because I feel it so strong it's now clearly a causation, but let's just say correlation between vaccine, then the PrEP Act in the 80s, more and more vaccines, now we're at 72 vaccines for children under the age of 18, used to be 7. And autism and gender and taking out vaccines, if you pretend they don't exist at all, look at the correlation with autism and the curve on the chart of the rise in autism as it correlates, as it goes along with the rise in gender identity. I don't want to say confusion. I don't want to be rude, but rapid
Wait
onset
a minute.
Gender
is,
dysphoria
is...
and all these things, it goes right along that. And there's many independent scientists who say, this is a smoking gun here. Why aren't we looking at it? Well, it's not politically power for the. It's not supporting the political powers. So look at that. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is because I don't even know why I decided to go off on that tangent. It's very real, though.
Yeah, I got a question. Do you have background noise or someone else there?
I was saying I didn't. So I had a wonderful pediatrician in Santa Monica who gave a lot of really. He was very popular, very wealthy neighborhood. And he, you know, as is true for many pediatricians in the most wealthy educated neighborhoods, gives a lot of permission and a lot of education on who needs it and who doesn't, which vaccines are right for your child and which aren't. There isn't just like one size fits all. So my children were very little vaccinated compared to others and coincidentally also happened to super be very masculine in their tastes and their predilections, along mm-hmm. with being sweet and sensitive and contemplative and artistic. So they were never confused whether they were truly male or wanted to wear dresses. They just never, because a healthy masculine isn't just all masculine. A healthy masculine has flavors of both, right? But they tend to feel like a man and have more of a protector provider energy, more task oriented. It's almost comical. I have to talk to my boys differently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but here's the problem, though, because in these days of toxic masculinity, there is no healthy male. There's nothing about males or masculinity that's healthy, according to the left, according to the popular political will. This is why I think this baby idea comes from.
That's bullshit.
But that's a theory. That's what's prevalent out there. I think that's behind the push to have male baby makers. It's like, guys don't want to make kids.
Well, if you take away
we don't want to get pregnant.
If you chemically castrate by vaccines and injected pharmaceuticals into babies, and I don't even like the word vaccines. Let's not even call them that because I don't believe anymore they even confer immunity. There is not a lot of evidence that they even confer immunity.
So what should we call
it? Very little of
it. I need a good word that people understand.
So I have a feeling, based on everything else, that we just did this castration injection, just neurological disruptors. And again, it's not just the injections for the children. There's a lot of neurological disruptors in our environment now. Our FDA is very loosey-goosey, as you well know. But
The FDA is paid for by Big Pharma, by all the tests that they do.
If you take away all masculine characteristics, if you shame, belittle, and then also physically try to castrate with chemicals, and then now you have a society that there's no one going to stand up against when a government comes in. I mean, it's actually very clever. Like, who's going to be the protector? And then all the movies, like we watch Mandalorian, and I tell my kids, oh, a woman can never be defeated in the Disney Mandalorian series. I mean, we like the Mandalorian, but literally we almost laugh because this woman is giant, with giant shoulders, a very masculine jaw, and she's defeating men left and right. And every single woman that's like the hero on this show is like this, and they have so many gender fluid characters. And, you know, but I always point it out, because even though I'm very inclusive and I love the fluidity and the spectrum, I just do, I'm also going to recognize brainwashing. I'm telling my sons that a physical female can defeat a physical male 9 times out of 10, which is what the show is trying to promote. And it's a joke. Mm-hmm. We don't need to do that. Women don't need that. We have our own powers that are really feminine and really beautiful and really spiritual, which also I believe this political agenda is trying to get rid of. So if we pretend that the only recognizable values and strengths are like women being super tough, boss bitches, and very masculine, now we have totally castrated the spirituality of our society also, because what the feminine energy brings is hugely rich, nurturing, and healing, and spiritual in nature. But let's ignore all that, right?
Yeah, and this is, like I say, I wonder how much of this, it's interesting you talk about the combination of let's just call them, shots, big pharma shots, the huge collection of drugs and kits, and you listen to Robert Kennedy, who should have our vaccine product liability bill by now. I've got folks working on that. But the thing is, he talks about this. He talks about the aluminum. He talks about the three things. You've got Alzheimer's, asthma, and allergies. Those are the three A's of the drug shots these kids are getting. And so if you combine that again with, and the aluminum is what's causing a lot of the problems, and if you combine that with with the fact that it's destroying, well, is this responsible for lowering a testosterone? Because male testosterone is dropping like a rock. So
so we have our FDA, clap your hands for the FDA allowing all the chemicals in the food. Obesity is a huge cause of testosterone drop. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So it's all combined. So there is a war on men. I mean, there really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a war on
men. As the guardians
men.
And the protectors. They don't want guardians and protectors. They want to be the guy. Well, this is interesting. First they replace God, then they replace men.
Hold on. Yeah. There's a war on women, too. There is a huge war on women, because if you tell a woman, here's what we're going to clap for, women. We're going to clap for you making money and you going and having your career and you trying to have kids or not, because who cares about them? They're just little leeches. But if you want to have them, go ahead and have your kids and your career, and you may or may not need a husband. They're kind of useless, and you're a boss bitch, and you run the fastest, and you do the most push-ups. And that's a masculine world. If you take a woman, someone who's inherently feminine, my idea of a woman is someone who carries heavy feminine energy naturally. The people out there that really beautifully carry, transmit, permutate feminine energy. So we never talked about Dorothy's definition of a woman, but that's pretty much it. Sorry, I just looked out my patio. My dog had eaten something entirely that is not edible, and it's all over my patio.
Oh. Well, you know, hey, live radio. We just keep going no matter what happens. Listen, we used to have Alan Dawson in Belize. He'd have screaming tropical birds outside his back porch.
I love every time that.
We've got it on the podcast. Just go back and check
that.
Alan.
I want screaming tropical birds, not a chewed up styrofoam pot planter.
Well, I've got plans for us all to go to Belize. You know, that's as soon as I get some more sponsors and a travel budget. You know, I'm going to take the whole show to Belize for a week. So we're all going. So, yeah, I got plans.
Okay, so there is a war on women, but it doesn't look like it. So the clever war on women is that we get to think we're winning. We get to think, but the women that come to me, and they usually don't get to me until they're in their 40s, because that's when women finally wake up and say, oh, my God, I'm so miserable. I'm going to die if I don't change something. What have I been doing all this time and believing? Because my life is jacked. And they come to people like me.
Many of these women have kids.
They come to people like me because they feel like they don't even know who they are anymore. At what point did I lose touch with what it is to be a woman, my pleasure, my bliss, my nurturing, and believe that my value is based on how fast, how much I can do, how much I can squish myself into a man's world and be like a man? Because that's the lie that's being told to women. And so it's very clever secret war against women also. And so we
it's so
can't
secret.
Raise up the...
If you look at sports, let's talk about the sports. Now, what they're saying is that men who basically have cosmetic, elective surgery are women all of a sudden, which is biologically impossible, and should compete equally with women in weightlifting and swimming and all these other things. Now, you don't see the so-called trans guys, on the uneven parallel bars. They're not going to do the things that women do better than men. Those are the flexibility events. You don't see guys doing that, the guys that are trying to be women. That doesn't happen. They only go after the strength things. Swimming, weightlifting, wrestling, martial arts, things like that. So it's really quite fascinating. But there is a war on women. It's like there's a war on sexual identity. There's a war on both masculinity and femininity. In other words, there are no men, there are no women. There is only unipeople. And it's coming from both ends. So the way they go after the guys, Ritalin, all these drugs that cause, school shootings, and total destruction of manhood. It's like the psychological and the physical level. The physical level is the drugs, and the psychological level is you're toxically masculine. You're never going to be worth anything, so you might as well kill yourself now. Feminine, the women, they're doing exactly the same thing, not with the drugs, but it's certainly a psychological operation, and there's a brainwashing operation that women aren't women, that men are women too. That's insane. Not only that, men can have kids.
Right, because if you take away polarity and you take away the gifts we have to offer, first of all, you minimalize the gifts. You mock them. You mock a woman who feels whole by staying home having children in a supportive group. Now, a woman staying home having children isolated is not natural.
What do you mean staying
and
home?
That is,
why do we call it staying home? That is soul depriving
versus going out to the workplace while having children or instead of having children. Working outside the home, bringing in... money from outside, so we can pay income taxes and make other people rich.
But you never talk about guys. You never talk about guys working outside the home. So that's a limitation too. You never say.
I don't know. I'm sorry. My social group kind of does. So maybe I'm different, but
they
many
talk about men
I
working
know,
outside the
like
home?
In fact, yesterday I date a very masculine man, almost. So I'm working on getting him into his feminine energy a little bit, but that's another
story.
Good
luck with
that. He's gung-ho.
Well, you
can
have masculine, feminine energy. I think I have both in many ways.
I know that.
And they're really strong, but I don't see that as that's not a problem, because we are complex
people. Everyone
needs
a little bit. I'm not going to get off on that. Everyone needs a little bit. And if you're out of touch with your feminine, it's because it's a little healing to do. But anyway, okay. So
work on your guy. See what happens.
I love him, though. I love being around him. I love being around. Good luck. it's almost comical. I don't. Okay. I love him, but I could do a little impersonations right now. But
go ahead.
But the wonderful thing, and I can't remember where I was going with this. What were we talking about? I was using him as an example.
He's not in touch with his feminine side.
Oh, working outside the home. So even him. So he's very masculine. And even yesterday, we're discussing the schedule. He's like, let's see. I think I'm working from home this day and this day and this day, going into the office this day. So he literally, and my ex-husband was like this too, CEOs of a lot of companies, and literally discussed whether he was going to be at home working or out. So I feel like that is changing a little bit. And what I'm talking about is women being shamed
hugely shamed for fully embracing the homemaker, nurturing, raising the kids. And I'll tell you, our culture has bought that hook, line, and sinker, because I, as progressive as, you know, as I am and my friends have been in the past 20 years, you know, past 15 years I've been parenting, I have many, many times felt I was inadequate or lazy or because I chose to stay home and homeschool. And even my ex-husband very much had that energy. Like, he would never say it overtly, but so many things he said and did, and especially after the separation, making a point that he worked and I just enjoyed myself, or he worked. And I, you know, to try to explain to someone that it's a 24-hour-a-day job and yeah. nobody can replace the mother in the home. Nobody. I'm not talking mm-hmm. about the father, because I can feel Greg saying, what about the father? Of course nobody can replace the father, but I'm talking about the mother right now.
I didn't say it yet.
There is no
Give
replacement. I know, but I know you so well. nobody can replace. And so, you know, but that's real. So there's really a war on women and being feminine, as well as a total war on being strongly in your masculine, confidently, and mm-hmm. doing those things which the masculine does so beautifully, and nobody, you know, and can't be replaced.
Well, there's mm-hmm. a war on masculine and feminine, and it's on a psychological level, and it's on a physical drug level, and it's on an institutional level. It's happening all over the place, and it's really scary.
You know, that being said,
yes, your topic of the day, topic du jour. Meanwhile, back to our original.
There's still a male biology, right, XY, and a female XX, and there's naturally stuff in between, all kinds of people in between, and there's naturally all kinds of expression in between, and there's room for everybody. I'll tell you what I'd love. Nothing more than a super feminine, I'm just going to say this, everyone can just throw stones and call me elitist. Here we go.
Go for it.
But I want, as a mom that also works in and out of the home and has three kids and wants to do everything really perfectly, and, you know, mm-hmm. I love nothing more than a mother's helper or housekeeper that is feminine in her nurturing, but super masculine in her ability to carry out tasks, be organized, you know, kind of fill in for me in the areas I can't. And the reason I'm saying that is because there's a lot of masculine traits that I don't hold that I really need in my life. And I would welcome someone who maybe identifies as a female, you know, but has a lot of masculine energy right now in my home.
You need like a former East
one
German,
example of
you know, military au pair or something. Yeah. You need like an Eastern European, you know, former communist country au pair. She's like really strong. That's
but she has to be sweet too.
No, I'm saying sweet, but how about an Israeli woman who's been in the armed forces who wants to be an au pair? That's what you need.
So I'm going to, you know, being from an Eastern European background, I'm going to say sometimes that energy for me is a little too not direct and not critical. What's the word I'm looking for? Well, it's good, but you know, you see the point I'm making. The point I'm making is there's room for everybody. There really is, and it's the politics
why,
to get out of it, and the chemicals and the pharmaceutical industry and their agenda
yeah.
would get out of
yeah.
it. We'd all be fine because everyone's mm-hmm. happy with everyone being who they are. If you're mm-hmm. if you're truly in a loving, healthy self-esteem and place in your life, and you're following your bliss and you're following your own personal energy, you're not hurting anybody. There'll be mm-hmm. somebody to fall in love with, somebody who needs just what you have to offer. There'll be a job for you. The problem is the politics of it all, and then shaming and castrating and belittling and confusing all the children as well as all the adults of what we're supposed to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That's essentially my take on things, Greg.
No, it's fascinating.
And
that
the
no,
definition
this is incredible.
Of woman should be someone yeah. who carries strong feminine energy innately, and that's where they find their pleasure, and they're really good at it. That's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the female is somebody who bears eggs, who bears live young and makes eggs. And that's different than a woman. A woman is a presentation, is a way of living, is, I don't know, argue with me on this one.
No, I don't have to. I agree with you. But what I make the
you
distinction
too?
Between, I do, yeah. No, I don't always disagree with you. It's not automatic. But no, but what I do is I just frame it a little differently. Like I say, we are biological, you know, physical, emotional, spiritual, psychological. There's all the different components. Okay, so biological, XXXY. That's the basic level. You know, spiritual, what we believe, how we identify our own personality can be anything. you know, like I say, from really ultra feminine, you know, metrosexual guys, you know, to the most macho, you know, UFC fighter. I mean, that's the spectrum. Same with women. You know, you've got the ones that look like former concentration camp guards all the way to beauty queens. You know, there's an entire range. But I separate the fact that from the biology to the personality and what things happening, what you're talking about, is that there's a merging of that. It's like when the left talks about illegal aliens or illegal immigrants. Well, they're confusing two issues because an immigrant is someone that's legal. So to call someone, you know, an illegal immigrant is a contradiction. But it blurs the issue. It blurs the issue to say we need gun control to stop gun violence. Well, gun violence is committed by criminals, not by honest, law-abiding people. So now you've confused the issue. So this issue gets confused too. What they're really saying is there is no gender, there is no sex, there is the uniperson. And the uniperson can be controlled by the state, and the uniperson has to go to the state for everything, for your drugs from big pharma, for your education from big government education, you know, and everything is supplied to you. And you have no personality. It's a destruction of identity. It's for the same reason that they bring sex into kids' lives at an early, the left wants, you know, wants to sexualize kids at, what, three? You know, why? Because it destroys their identity. It destroys who they are as an individual. Everything is really geared to destroying the individual. And
you
part
mean
of being
gender,
an individual,
gender, put them in a gender at age three? Or what do you mean sexualize? Help me understand. What do you
sexualize.
Mean?
In other words, bring in drag queens in the schools and talk about sex ed at the earliest possible point and have the groomers out there.
Oh,
And do
saying.
Everything to kids to make them, you know, have
like
a
sex ed
beauty contest for five-year-olds. What's that?
Oh, I know. That's disgusting, right?
But if you talk about sex with kids at an early age, you got a four-year-old that says, where do babies come from? You want to deal with that on a level of a four-year-old. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which might be from mommy and daddy. Oh, okay, cool. You know, and that might be all I want to know.
That's
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you say, let me show you how it's done. Here, watch this film of the animals mating. Would you do that to a four-year-old? No.
Well, a four-year-old on a farm, you're not protecting a four-year-old on a farm.
Well, that's a good point.
And they're some of the healthiest, most grounded. You're not gonna. By the time they're in middle school, high school, you're not gonna shake their views on sexuality. And they're like, whatever. I know mm-hmm. I know the real thing because I grew up around it. And you know, we talk about this most. You know, humans in human history. There's, mm-hmm. you know, you're intense. I mean, kids from a very young age know that there's sex. They know. They hear the women giggling and talking around the campfire. Much less protected conversations, mm-hmm. and it's impossible to shield them from sex. And there's no reason
to
do it.
No, I'm not saying
it.
Shield them from sex, but you don't want to destroy their identity in the process. You don't want to destroy their self-esteem, their self-confidence of who they are. In other words, if they don't believe that they should be sexual at four, that there's something wrong with them, you know, and then you got the pedophiles. That's a whole other story of the old rumors that, you know,
masturbate frequently, but that's a whole other topic. I mean, it's really all how you handle it.
Where did that
all
come from?
Things, you know, and
really 4 year olds.
Well, I mean,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. They love to like stick their hand. Oh my gosh. Funny story. When my, I was blessed to have,
don't embarrass your kids. Now. Don't embarrass your kids. I'm just warning you. Don't embarrass your kids.
Boys. Are you kidding? My hairdresser, Laura, she used to come to our house to cut the kids' hair, and we will never forget when my oldest son, and I'm going to, you're right, I probably shouldn't tell the story. Well,
don't tell us.
Anyway.
Tell it to me off the air.
He just did something that little
boys
will do. He came out, he's very uninhibited because they're not given messages.
Okay,
you know, they
warning.
Don't start taking the messages
going
on.
Going once, going twice.
And,
go ahead, tell it.
Well,
I told you.
Well, he came into the living room while she was cutting my hair so happy and pleased with himself and just really uninhibited and with no clothes on, and I'm not going to take any further, but we just laughed and okay. And then my girlfriend is a nurse from UCLA, you know, she's a pediatric, she was the director of pediatric ICU at UCLA, very educated. And we remember when they were like toddlers, and we would always have happy hour together. We called it that on Fridays, and all the toddlers would be there, and you know, we're changing diapers, we're chatting. And, you know, one of the little boys is gleefully grabbing himself down below and just pulling on it, you know, as little ones will do. And she says, immediately, without even missing a beat, she says, that's right, you have a beautiful penis. Because in her education and her experience, you celebrate, you don't shame. And these are my people, and I love it. And it's not mm-hmm. sexualizing, it's affirming.
No, that's
and then
different.
Later you tell them,
that's different.
Later you tell them,
And later when it's, you tell them, you know, that's kind of private. So we keep that to ourselves. That's for the back, mm-hmm. you know, in our culture. And so there's ways to do things. There's ways to do things so that you celebrate the genitals, celebrate sexuality without, as you said, age appropriate, without shame mm-hmm. and, without.
Well, see, that's, now that's different.
Them. Right?
And that's different than violating, like you said, and destroying their self-esteem and sexualizing them. And you have, you got junior high girls that have boys walk into their bathroom. In fact, some of them, there's one case in Virginia where they're basically a rapist, you know, was going in. And then instead of throwing this kid in jail, they sent him to another school where he did exactly the same thing, dressed as a woman.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so that's the kind of, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
And poor sex ed in schools and poor parenting. And God only knows what happened to that child at home. And so bullies pay it forward. So if you have parents that aren't doing a good job with sex ed at home, have their own mm-hmm. trauma and abuse issues, and who knows what's happening by neighbors, there are so many kids that are just, and now you know, it all goes to
but the other kids shouldn't have to suffer for it, though. The other kids shouldn't have to suffer for
that. I agree with
abuse.
You, but I'm saying
or assault.
This is another problem with the public school system is they're mm-hmm. not really raising the children to be healthy. So conflict negotiation and social skills should be the only thing, in my opinion, taught. And creativity and frontal lobe development play up until age 7 in schools. You don't need anything else until age 7. This is a strong statement, but it's based on a lot of research. And you have that mm-hmm. special child that reads early, great. Have fun with him at home. But the school setting needs to be social skills, conflict negotiation, social skills, including, you know, sex ed in an age-appropriate way, as we've already discussed, which has nothing to do with, anything you would teach a middle schooler. But then you don't end up with kids like that. I mean, parents are farming their kids out to the public school system, which is part of probably this overall agenda. I hate to say it, but and so why are we surprised that's happening? And that's not that. I don't even think that's that kid's fault. At that point, I don't even give him responsibility. I think that child is so confused, screwed up, and traumatized himself. You know, he probably needs to be in major therapy and not even in a group setting, right? The child that did
makes sense. But again, you don't subject the other kids to a kid that's going to be abusing them, you know. But you said that the school should be raised.
And this is what they're doing in
schools, Greg. Yeah. Oh, I know. I understand
they're doing this.
You said the schools,
just with sexuality, though. This has been going on a long time. This whole feeling that, oh, the bully's the victim. No. You remove
the
bully until the bully has been non-traumatized, until you undo the trauma, because a bully in any capacity will create more bullies. It's extremely traumatic for children to be bullied. And this attitude that, they'll work it out and just put them in school and socialize them from a young age in school, they're not getting socialized in a good way in school at all. They're getting socialized really to be completely shut down and traumatized.
I would abolish the government schools. You know, you talked about schools, you know, raising kids. I don't want the schools raising the kids. I want the parents raising the kids. I would close them all down.
Yeah.
I think government schools are one of the most dangerous entities in this country. You know, kids should be homeschooled and group tutored and take special classes. I wrote 7-part. Did you ever read my education treatise, you know, on Substack? I got 7 parts to it. It's 14,000 words long of an entire new model for education. I think you'd find it fascinating. Tell me what happened in Santa Monica. What were you going to say?
Mm-hmm. I just remember this trend. I just remember when I had my kids paying attention and being frequently pleased and frequently shocked and appalled at what was normal, considered normal for children. So went to this beautiful little art center, so inclusive, so like the children could just paint wherever they wanted and use any materials, and the staff was so supportive, and it was all about creativity and collaboration. They did everything mm-hmm. right. Except there was an autistic child there, a child on the spectrum somewhere, who was violent. And instead of, because they feel so guilty drawing boundaries that are healthy to protect victims, because now the trend is, well, the autistic child needs to have his feelings valued and we don't want him to be excluded. No, you have to protect children from someone who's violent. It doesn't matter why they're violent. It doesn't matter why they're having a bad day. You know, they ate something that affected their brain. They have a virus. Who knows? But you have to protect. So there's a huge trend that the autistic kids are incorporated into schools. And I sympathize with the parents who don't know what to do with their kids that are damaged, probably from vaccines, almost 100% of them.
Is there an antidote to that, by the way?
And they want They want everyone to include them, and I understand that, but you can't do that. I'm sorry. You can't have your children interrupting the education and violating the peace and traumatizing, you know, and not all autistic kids are so socially disconnected, I guess, and violent, but it certainly is very common, right? So in this case, I just remember this push for inclusion at the risk of everyone else, right? And the same thing with the furries in the classroom. I mean, look, your kid thinks they're a furry. That's adorable. A lot of preschoolers love to pretend. But in a certain grade, at a certain level of education, where all the group is agreeing that here we're here to learn today and focus, I'm sorry, your child can't have a water bowl at the back of the room and wear a costume every day. It's distracting. They can do that at home. In this group, this is what we do. If you want to be part of this group, this is what we do, right?
That's fascinating. Has anyone studied a reversal of the damage from these shots that these kids are getting? In other words, can you reverse autism by whatever was put in the jab to begin with? Is it like a reverse jab that can take away autism?
So
if autism is caused
really
by vaccine jabs, you know, in the same way, like people have had COVID jabs. There are ways to get rid of the blood clots, so like Cardio Miracle and some other products, like Dr. Judy Mikovits knows about, who's a real friend of the show here. She's on all the time for things
she's
like
fantastic.
This. So, she is fantastic. Did you ever get a chance to talk to her when she's been on?
No, I don't know if I'd be speechless.
Why?
I'd start stuttering. She's like a huge celebrity and a fangirl.
Yeah, but to us, she's Judy. I call her Judy on the show. You know, she's like one of us here.
Okay. So I'm a huge believer that autism is reversible, and this is not my specialty, but I know plenty of people who've done all kinds of therapies, plenty of parents who've done all kinds of, from, you know, chelating the heavy metals out of the brain, dietary changes, because as Dr. Wakefield, the genius who was completely smeared, was trying to point out that the gut is hugely important in the neurofunction. That's all he was trying to do.
Talk about
the relationship between the gut and neurofunction. They're like, wait a minute. Somebody might draw a conclusion that you're saying MMR can cause autism, which we know it absolutely can. And we had the CDC doctor shred those studies and speak out about it. But
those are the only two.
My kid got two shots. There's so much science on that, and parents should have hope and absolutely try to do that, I believe, if their children are autistic. Just get involved in the natural health community, and there's been a lot of success.
That's fascinating. Yeah, because my kid got like two shots, the MMR and the DPT, the two traditional ones. And then I asked Judy about this, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who doesn't know about, you know, and I said, wait a minute. So how prevalent are these drugs? How prevalent are these diseases, diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus? She says, hardly at all. They haven't had cases in 100 years. You know, measles is coming back and other ones are because of all the illegal aliens crossing our border. But that's by design. That's intentional. But these drugs, the second question I asked her is, well, even if you get these diseases, are they fatal? Are they treatable? She says, no, they're all treatable. I said, well, what's the big deal? Why would you risk autism and a lifetime of chronic problems from a pharma drug, pharma shot? I think I'll call them pharma shots from now on. So why would you risk everything from a pharma shot when the disease itself, first of all, is incredibly rare, and even if you get it, it's curable and treatable? That makes no sense to me.
And they lie to everyone, and they give these I don't even know, the news will have this epidemic of measles in, you know, Disneyland, which is what was the big push, several years ago.
Well, measles is not fatal, generally.
And then came to find out most of the people that had measles were vaccinated, had been vaccinated. So now they have that vaccine sensitivity. I can't remember what it's called, what happens so commonly.
Vaccine-induced,
that you're more susceptible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Polio's the same
you're
way.
More susceptible to the disease. So is pertussis. You said your kid's got DPT. One of mine did too. He's the only one that gets croup-like cough. So he's more susceptible to pertussis now. And it's really a shame.
Well,
the
pharma shots destroy your immune system. We talked about this earlier, that this is a marketing plan. Just as the neocons will start a war in a country like Ukraine or Afghanistan to blow the hell out of it and make, you know, billions or trillions of dollars, then they come along and say, well, we need to rebuild this country so they can get billions and trillions more. So it's like they destroy, they rebuild. In the same way, Big Pharma is pushing pharma shots that destroy your immune system under the guise of trying to boost your immune system. But they're actually destroying it, making the need for more pharma shots. It's a self-perpetuating industry. You know, it's like, again, why we mentioned this with Jonathan in the first hour. You know, why do movie theaters sell you popcorn with tons of salt on it? So you buy soda. What else is in the soda? Salt, which makes you more thirsty. So if you buy a soda, the reason that you're not quenching your thirst with soda is it's got sugar in it to make it addictive, and it's got salt to make you thirstier. That's a marketing thing. That's just a marketing product. It's not a drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the same way, Pharma Shots are a marketing product. They destroy the very thing they say they're trying to boost, which is your immune system, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So here's, I mentioned this earlier with Jonathan. I don't know if I talked to you about this, but, or maybe I just did. I'm losing track today. It's been so busy. But the idea that people that had COVID and got over it naturally. So COVID only affected less than 1% of the population seriously. Those that died were a very small fraction of 1% of the population of the country. Everybody else was fine. We got at worst moderate symptoms. I had it for 2 days. I got over it in 2 days. 2 days of rest. I had it for about 2 weeks. Worst cough ever. I'm going to play one of my shows sometime. I sounded awful when I had COVID first week of January 2020.
It sounded terrible. I remember it too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I was working 2 full-time jobs.
I was functional. I just had that horrible cough and couldn't sleep because of the cough at night. But yeah, I was functional.
I couldn't sleep either. Yeah, early. But then we got over it. Now my question is, because we got over it naturally and never took a jab, I wonder if our immune system, because it's a bioweapon, it was an unnatural, it was a disease, it was a virus not found in nature, it was man-made through gain of function, through Wuhan and North Carolina, you know, the bioweapons program. So we know that. So now the question is, having gotten over it, I mean, it wasn't as strong as they thought it was. They didn't gain enough function to kill everybody or as many people as they wanted. We came back and said, ha, our immune systems work. Screw you, you know. And so... is our immune system stronger for having gotten over a bioweapon? I have been sick since I had COVID, except when I had a colonoscopy check, which is the older person's check, which is fine, by the way. But that's when I got a cold because, you know, obviously that's invasive, you know, way inside your body. And so I got a cold for a few days after that. But that was it.
The chemicals they put in you also, yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
They knocked me out, right? The nurse says, goodbye, Greg. I said, goodbye. Or I said, goodnight, not goodbye. He says, you know, goodnight, Greg. Goodnight. I woke up like
now
later.
I get colonics. I
was like, oh, are we done? What's
I think
that?
Colonics are very healthy. I get colonics, my friends. My friends in the health community and I.
The point is, I haven't been sick.
Let's not get off track.
But the point is, I haven't been sick since I had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And got over it naturally. So I'm wondering, do we have strong immune systems?
Have you changed, though? I'll tell you what. I've gotten very wise, though, about my, like, COVID alchemized so many people into better nutrition. And they said they don't ever want to be in a position where they're going to be one of the ones that go down. So, you know, people are more aware of their sugar. I don't know. Like, did you start taking more vitamin D or vitamin A? I did be very conscientious about more so even than before about my minerals and my vitamins, making sure
I've always taken vitamin C, although I haven't as much you know, recently. But vitamin D is the only thing I've added. Tried quercetin for a while, but got over it because I was fine. Yeah, vitamin D is the
big one. Nobody was talking about vitamin D. Nobody was talking about it. And that's like probably one of the most important ones, to have a decent level of vitamin D for upper respiratory viral.
Well,
right?
I've noticed a side effect of vitamin D. My vision's improving.
Oh, yay. I need to be taking that again, then. I always forget.
No, vitamin D does a lot of things. It's really good.
I was really good about it for like 2 years.
I can't stand bright sunlight. Hurts my eyes. And so I don't spend a lot of time in the sun. And I had skin cancer. I thought because of the sun, but I really think that was the sunscreen that gave it to me. So I don't wear sunscreen.
And seed oils, we talked about.
Oh, I got rid of those too. Those are gone.
If you get rid of seed oils, you'll never burn again.
Oh, that's interesting.
Hashtag
okay.
Facts. I know. And, you know, some of the things we talk about, I wonder, like, it's so, because I've researched so many hours and I went into it with an open mind, to me, it was knowledge prior to the pandemic about the Chapel Hill, Wuhan, Harvard connection, and that they took the gain of function research and they moved it to Wuhan because they got a slap on the wrist. But when you and I mentioned it on the air, like, yeah, of course. You know, I know your listenership is probably in, you know, more likely to understand that. But because my view really is, yeah, everyone knows that, right? And then I think, does everyone know that by now? Or are we still in this game?
No, they
game
don't.
Where
no,
like,
no, we are.
No,
we are
no, there's no gain of function. That doesn't exist. Fauci's a good guy.
No, I'm not listening to you.
No.
Yeah, no. No, there's an entire population of idiots out there that are not so much, you know, they're not stupid.
Victims.
They're just ignorant. They're ignorant of the facts because
victims.
They don't believe. Yeah, it's like people that say there's no evidence the election was stolen. Well, I respond, there's no evidence that you've looked at, because you won't look at it, because it'll destroy. If you ever see how much evidence there really is that the election is stolen, it's going to disrupt your assumption. And one of my longest standing, I guess, axioms of this show is that assumptions are stronger than truth. People will go to their graves with their assumptions. Don't challenge
their
assumptions.
Isn't that insane? And I guess I'm
true.
Probably, you know, here I am about to say, how can you be like that? But you know what? I'm sure there's things I know that certain things you could push buttons on me that I would feel triggered by for sure, but not everything.
Well, let me know when you get one.
I even have a very conservative friend, and he's, you know, he, and then the other day he even said, I mentioned the election fraud, and he said, oh, I don't know about that. And I was like, what? I was like, no, myself,
well,
a Democrat at the time, I was voting for Bernie Sanders, by the way, during the primaries. He was my guy. Mm-hmm. And I did vote for Clinton. And during the Democrat primaries, during the debates, I watched it with my then Republican husband, my three neutral children who are like, they're making us watch debates, but okay, whatever. And they're very open. Children, if you don't influence them and you don't give your opinion, they can see right through people. That they're fun to watch political debates with. They are funny. Okay, so
well,
we all watched together. Yeah, they're like, this person's a big liar.
Yeah,
like,
he's lying.
Remember the one guy that kept there? Well, I don't want to get too off topic, but my kids are, I love hanging out with them in general, but they're very, yes, critical thinking, open-minded by nature. Kids are and mm-hmm. intuitive. But
right.
By the time the elections came, by that time I was very concerned about the Democrat Party because of the pandemic. I was getting very panicky, like, wait a minute, my whole life I'm run Democrat. What are we doing? And we watched all night long. We let them stay up, and we saw that sudden shift of the votes. We actually watched it happen. And so mm-hmm. you had a bunch of people who weren't expecting that, who have never talked about political fraud. That's not what we talk. We all saw it, and we were like, oh, my God, that just happened. And the people I know that kind of came from that viewpoint of, like, we're just watching life. We're not trying to, you know, predict anything or – you know, all had the same view, like something really weird just happened. Something really weird just happened.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, everything shut down. And
so
it's like,
that's the only thing I need. That's the only evidence I need. But then the data mm-hmm. statisticians, so many experts came forward and explained how it was impossible. And so, mm-hmm. you know, that sealed
impossible.
The deal for me. But
yep.
yeah.
Well, I'll put it on a real basis. You don't need any evidence at all. And this is something you can ask folks. And I've asked the same question on the air with people and in life, you know. Do you believe that Joe Biden, in a declining mental state, who promised to basically raise energy prices, destroy our economy, tax the hell out of us, put us on a Green New Deal, destroy our military,
mm-hmm.
make a
mm-hmm.
sucky foreign policy, and be paid for and bought by China, do you really think that the American public voted for that over low energy, a great economy? You know, so is it possible intuitively?
And if he was Obama, we might believe it, because Obama was wildly popular. I mean, he swept us off our feet. He was well spoken, and he was popular prior to.
Yeah, but he ran on white guilt.
Nowhere.
He ran on white guilt.
How I felt. I didn't feel that way at all. I voted for him. I didn't feel that way at all. I felt charmed. I felt taken care of.
I saw a liar.
Like he was another JFK.
Oh, that's fascinating. No, he was a liar.
Yeah,
I looked at him and I thought, this man is lying, liar, liar, pants on fire. I never trusted him. I never liked him. And nothing to do with being black either. So this is as people, the white guilt people.
Well,
a
now
for
I
Obama.
Know he was CIA and all this. But, I mean, some people are very good actors. I was married to an actor, so I know how easy he gets deceived. But, you know, on that note, I have to go. But I love our talks. And I guess the whole point of my feeling today was like, inclusivity is okay. With critical
as
thinking,
long
like
as
we
it
love
is
everyone. We
as
love
long as
everyone
it isn't
for how they come into the world naturally. We're not trying to make anyone be different, whether it's mm-hmm. different this way or different that way. And we're very accepting, and we're very and that a woman can be not necessarily born XX, and that's okay. Yet at the same time, you know, let's work together to make people very aware of pharmaceutical companies and political agendas and how they're damaging. They're not about inclusion. They're about forcing us in some very weird place, right?
No, they say inclusion, but that's the Marxian dialectic. So the Marxian dialectic is talking about one thing and doing something else, or projection, blaming people for accusing people of the crime that you're doing. In other words, colluding with Russia. Hillary gave away 20% of our uranium. I don't know how much more collusion you can get. In fact, I want to try and trace where that went. That's my next project.
Okay.
But yeah, but the thing is, you know, if you want to celebrate diversity, then actually believe in real diversity and let people be who they are and not change them to your point of view. That's not diversity. That's propaganda. That's manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Well, Greg, on that note, I have to run because I have a kid going.
Well, I love
to
our chats too.
But I feel like I could talk to you all day long, and I love our discussions.
Yeah, we
but
could.
We'll have to pick it up next week.
Okay. Contact information, please.
Dorothy Diana on Facebook, and my website, YoniYun, Y-O-N-I, Y-U-N.com. And thank you so much.
Oh, I love your, I love our discussions too. So take care. Have a great week. And we'll talk next week. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye now. So as usual on Monday, I never got to play any of my commercials except one because I was trying to contact one of my friends, you know, and see if I can get her on the show. That's Catherine Arnett. But we'll work on that. This has been fascinating. So Mondays are just nuts around here. But it makes sense because I have the most time to prepare for the Monday show because I have Saturday and Sunday and like most of Friday for it as well. So that's how that works. I did play one of my commercials. I'm going to play a couple more and give, you know, maybe our like a promo, I'll throw that in too. But basically, this has been a wild day. Now, tomorrow's going to be interesting. Tomorrow, we got Brianna Cannon starting things off at 7 a.m. Central. We've got Joe Cicasi at 8 a.m. And then we've got Michael Bowlby's coming back to talk about an article he wrote in 2021 on Colony Ridge, on this Texas community that is illegal alien. Basically, the whole thing is a whole city of illegal aliens. And I sent Josie a few days ago the website, the Spanish one, to bring all the illegal aliens into this community with the nice pictures and how they can finance it. You know, have this. I'm curious because I can't read Spanish, so I don't know what Josie finds on that. So tomorrow's gonna be a really interesting day. Anyway, so we got Brianna, Josie, and Michael. So there's no free hours for conversations. Pianki called earlier. I apologize. There's just stuff. You know, I really want to talk to Dorothy. This is only a couple times I don't take calls. Dorothy usually, and sometimes Brianna, I don't take calls either because I really like talking to them, and it's the only chance I get. But most of the times, most guests, you know, I do open up, or I have a special guest. A lot of times I don't take calls for those either because there's only so much time. Anyway, this show is packed with information and revelations. And so take it, listen to it, share with all your friends, share our bills because nothing happens if you don't share the show and you don't share the bill. We've really done our part. It's really up to you to do your part. And you got the easy part. Just copy the links to the bills and copy the links to the shows and send them to everybody you know, all of media and all of government. Simple, right? Anyway, so Greg Penglis for Action Radio and our main site here, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our latest site is writeyourlaws.com, writeyourlaws, writeyourlaws.com. My Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com. Contributions are at givesendgo.com/actionradio. And my public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. See you all tomorrow at 7 a.m. when we do it all again. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.